It's now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Going to be talking about what's going on over in the State House. There's talk of closing the Delaware loophole. That's something we've been advocating for some time. But is it really closing the loophole, or is it just finding another avenue to keep those tax breaks, to keep that money into the same hands who are not paying the taxes that they're able to, well, shift over to that magic box? We're going to find out about that. Also going to find out more on the explosion in West Texas, the fertilizer plant that was, well, blows my mind, 500 feet from a school, about 1,000 feet from a nursing home, and 2,500 feet from a hospital. Zone much? No, evidently not. Also going to talk about the war on workers as it rages on. The immigration hearing today, and, well, it is Transportation Tuesday. What shall we privatize today? Because evidently we're not going to invest in it. Let's see if we can sell it off for some pennies. Maybe the profitable stuff. Just a thought. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, with your thoughts, your questions, comments, whatever's on your mind. You can also email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. The big news here in Harrisburg, a bunch of rallies, one of the big ones. The gun folks were out, with their signs, a couple of them misspelled. Got to work on the grammar, guys. But they had their signs, they had their flags, and they were taking the day off from work, I guess. Or if they work. What I found interesting about the folks that I had an opportunity real briefly to talk to, that's about it. Not much interesting there. I mean, this idea that you can have a rational discussion with one of these folks, impossible. The second you brought up any reasonable question, shouted down. So it's just a matter of these are the fives, these are the folks who you're just never going to get through to. And I eventually just said, this is an exercise in futility. Just kind of a waste of time. There was a good number of folks, maybe 100, but still, no rational thought there. And for me, I gotta be honest, as somebody who grew up in an area where if you saw someone with a gun, you ran quickly, duck behind something quickly, cause somebody's gonna get shot. Having grown up in that area, I understand the need, the want, to say, we need to figure out how to get the guns out of people's hands. But now living in an area where, I know people who have guns for show. They're table items. I know people who hang them on the walls, and that's a whole different culture. And the reality is I believe there's got to be some middle ground that says, hey, we need to know where these people are getting this stuff. We need to know. The thing that blows my mind about this Boston Marathon bombing is the amount of ammunition, the amount of weaponry these two idiots got, and no way to trace them. Does that not bother anyone? You look at the fact that 4 million people were held hostage in their homes. And, I had this conversation earlier, talking about, you register your car, so can I now advocate for no registration for my car? And I know there's some mild differences, but this idea that, and I found out that there is no way of knowing who owns a gun. I mean, it's almost impossible to go back and find who a gun belongs to at this point. So I think the conversation is healthy. Whether anything happens, I doubt it. I doubt anything is going to happen. But the conversation is healthy. And I think it's one that we have to have. Where does your right begin to infringe on mine? And, you know, as the old man always told me, you've got the right to do anything you want until your right infringes on mine. So I think it's something we need to be talking about. Also, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives today passed House Bill 818. How they've been framing this, and this is one of those things that kind of grabs my attention. When you're going to lie to me, at least pretend like you know you're lying to me. They're framing this House Bill 818 as we don't want to use taxpayer money to fund abortions. And I understand that. I do. I understand that there are some that say, you know, we shouldn't be funding that. And I get it. Okay. But you shouldn't then pass a law that says that I can't take my own money and invest in an insurance policy in the private market with my money because you're against abortions. I mean, at some point, women have to wake up in this country and realize that the right wing is attacking their personal health. Because then it doesn't just become about abortions. It becomes about a whole slew of things that women use, services that women need. And I look at across the country how Planned Parenthoods are they're closing up shop. And the thing that gets me is for the majority of women in those areas, that's where they get their care. That's where they go to the doctor that my wife goes and sees, and I don't go with her. There's also a companion bill, Senate Bill 3, working its way through. And, you know, Corbett's going to sign when it goes through. So that means a little bit more of your rights. And as I was standing on the steps today watching these guys, and there are very few women there. The women who were there were props, and they were paid to be there for the most part, as I could tell. But they're mostly guys. I wish women would take their rights to their body as seriously as these guys took their rights to hold a big gun. Just a thought. But you know, you look at all of this legislation that comes out, and you look at all of this Alex stuff, you look at all of this corporate stuff, you look at all of the push behind it. I look at these buses, nice buses pulled up, a lot of money funding these things. You go, I wonder who's paying for this stuff. You know, well, who's behind it? And, you know, oddly enough, it's a lot of these conservative think tanks. It's a lot of these right-wing groups like Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works. You know, and the Tea Party think tank over at the Commonwealth Foundation. You know, they've all got their tentacles into this stuff because, look, if we can be anti-government, they want to be right there. Because it's always easier to be against something. It's always easier to say, okay, there's the total. Let's tear that down. And I look at the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation, who right now is running their fundraising drive under the idea that they have this Project Goliath. And I talked a little bit about this yesterday because they want to go after organized labor. They want to go after the representatives of workers. And they want to go after workers. I mean, at the end of this, whether you're a union worker or a non-union worker, this is going to hurt your conditions. This is going to tear you down. This is going to harm the job site. It's what it's designed to do. And you look at Pat Toomey's letter, and what I'm talking about is our Senator, Pat Toomey, sent out a letter on behalf of the Commonwealth Foundation begging for money. Our Senator, our U.S. Senator, sending out a letter basically pimping the Commonwealth Foundation, this Tea Party think tank, this really right-wing ideological group, begging for money so that they could attack workers. And this whole Project Goliath thing. And I often wish, quite often wish, that organized labor had the power that groups like the Tea Party think tank, Commonwealth Foundation, that they project. And I love this Project Goliath thing. Like the unions are these big monsters, and us, the little think tank that could, we're going to go after them, and we're going to sling our arrows at them. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the roles are completely opposite. What they're doing, and it's a masterful plan. Look, you got to. How can you slay something if you're not the underdog? How can you rile people up if you're, because that's the American spirit, right? We like to believe we're the underdog. We're going to fight for the underdog, and we're going to take on the behemoth and take him down. Well, and the reality is these, this network of think tanks, this network of right-wing groups all across this country who are tied together by what? Billionaire money. The Koch brothers. Billionaire money. Lots of it. The Scapes of the world. Lots of money. And what do they get out of it? Well, you get the anti-government rhetoric, and you get a whole lot of public policy that benefits you. You get huge loopholes, like the Delaware loophole. Why is that not closed? Because the rich people don't want it. They want it wide open, because that's how they funnel their money through. That's how they launder their money through. But what I find interesting is they're going to go after. We're going to go after Project Goliath. We're going to go after those people. And then what they want is they want, you know, to destroy collective bargaining, thus the piece of legislation by John Eichelberger, the Republican, going after collective bargaining for cops and firefighters, which I find class act, John. Nice job. Only days after the people were calling heroes in Boston, days after, here we got this co-sponsorship memo. We need to steal collective bargaining from those cops and those firefighters. And last year you had the guy say, well, we need to get rid of prevailing wage, you know, for the children of those dead soldiers. Class acts. And where does all this stuff come from? It comes from groups like ALEC. It comes from groups like the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. And you look at their budget, how much it's grown. From 2008, from the information that I've got, Lee Fong over at The Nation has a great piece on this. He pointed out $890,000 this Tea Party think tank had in 2008. Just last, in 2011, up to almost $2 million just to fund all of this minutia, all of this manure that comes flowing out of that place. And it's funded by big corporations. And it's financed in part by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Started with workers' comp money. Workers' money. Another group trying to destroy workers' rights while benefiting off the backs of the most vulnerable workers. I mean, this whole cesspool of right-wing, this whole cesspool is just, it's maddening. And you see these big corporations who are funding this stuff. Because look, they're pushing it. Right now, Pennsylvania, get ready. The attacks are coming. We're going to be the next Wisconsin, the next Ohio, the next Michigan. It's coming this way. They're going to push their filth. They're going to push their ideology right down our throats. And if we're not in the streets and we're not vigilant, it's coming. Because the money is coming here. They are setting up the infrastructure. You've got the Americans for Prosperity people, you know, the Koch brother money. They've set up the Pennsylvania Independent, which independent my backside. Basically just a handmaiden of the right-wing think tanks. Here, publish our stuff. Folks, we got to pay attention to this. To be honest, anything that comes out of the Commonwealth Foundation, you got to wonder if they write it all themselves or if it's just handed down from the likes of ALEC, if it's just handed down from the think tanks in D.C., the Heritage Foundations, the Cato's, the American Enterprise Institute. These people aren't conservatives. And look, I reach out to good, honest, decent conservatives because, hey, we share a lot of the same values. We share a lot of the same ideas. And, you know, we can have honest discussions about the directions. This group, these people, they want to take us back to the good old days of the 90s, the 1890s. Children in the looms, children in the mines. Public education for who? Oh, that's right. Nobody. We better get active. We better get angry. We better get to the streets. That's why we're here, and that's why I'm telling you, folks, we need to be sticking together now more than ever and exposing this kind of nonsense. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about House Bill 440. Closes the loophole in Delaware? We'll find out. Quick break. We want the world, and we want it now. We're gonna take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Stay alive. listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Kenneth Paris, chief economist with the Communications Workers of America, says labor and environmental activists came away from the Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference in Washington last week with a strengthened understanding of the need to work together.
It's a coalition where environmentalists recognize that the rights of workers and decent-paying jobs and to have the ability to choose whether to be a union member or not without fear is critical to improving the environment. And you have unions who have learned that improving the environment is critical on the job, in the community, for their families and for the globe, and that we have to work together to move forward where we have good jobs, green jobs.
Paris says America's infrastructure is decaying and much of it is antiquated. China has more efficient electric grids, losing far less power as it's transmitted. Paris says big investments in infrastructure would create good jobs while improving the environment and preparing the nation's infrastructure for the impact of climate change. He says the broken political process complicates progress, but the Blue-Green Alliance can help empower working progressives to fight effectively for change.
We need to form a broad progressive coalition, an alliance, a movement to empower citizens to be able to take part in the process, the political process, effectively.
23 striking Teamsters sanitation workers returned to work Monday at Republic Services landfill in Youngstown, Ohio. The union says the workers never wanted to strike, but the company's behavior left them no choice. There were national solidarity picket line extensions throughout the strike. The Teamsters say for them, this strike was about the company, Republic Services Allied Waste, breaking the law. The Teamsters have suspended the unfair labor practices strike at Youngstown. Workers in Colorado are a step closer to receiving more protections when a company uses a defensive lockout in contract negotiations. Under Colorado law, workers are already authorized to receive unemployment benefits when a company engages in an offensive lockout. Such a lockout is used by companies to pressure workers to accept a contract. A defensive contract lockout is when a company locks out their workers as a repercussion for workers within the same industry striking against another company. Such a tactic was employed by grocery chains King Soopers and Safeway in 1996. The two grocers were in joint contract negotiations, so when workers at King Soopers struck, Safeway took a defensive posture and locked out its workers. A bill currently meandering through the Colorado legislature would extend unemployment benefits to workers being targeted in a defensive lockout. That bill is opposed by grocery chains and Republicans, but strongly supported by labor organizations and Democrats. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Just when he thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alert.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So on Monday, the Senate voted 74-20 to begin debate on the Marketplace Fairness Act, otherwise known as the Amazon loophole. How are we going to make the online retailers pay taxes like the brick and mortar stores? eBay put up a huge campaign over the weekend, though, sending out some 40 million emails to its users to voice opposition to the bill. Their CEO said in the emails that the legislation would be unfairly burdensome to small online merchants and asked eBay users to send an email to members of Congress asking for changes, like exempting eBay, of course. No, but you know, you look at this and you go, at some point, you've got to pay your fair share. You've got to pay the taxes because we need roads and bridges and we need to fund education. And I look at this massive loophole that we have here in Pennsylvania, this Delaware loophole, which we've been talking about for years, this magic box where companies get to launder all their profits through. And well, what do we end up with? Well, we end up with schools that are struggling to stay afloat. We end up with an infrastructure that's crumbling, and we end up cutting budgets on the backs of those least able to afford it and the most vulnerable, which is why I've asked Sharon Ward to come talk to us. She's executive director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, here to talk about House Bill 440. Is this an actual opportunity to close the Delaware loophole? We shall find out. Sharon, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Happy to be here.
So, Is this going to close the loophole, or is this going to create another loophole?
Well, The House Bill 440 is another big cut to profitable businesses with a fig leaf, a bone to closing the Delaware loophole. The reality is it actually creates another loophole. So rather than making companies pay their fair share, it gives them another way to avoid taxes. But the sponsors get to claim they're doing something to close the Delaware loophole.
Just to make us figure out another name for another, to give it another loophole. Because look, everybody I talk to now knows there's this magic box. It's the Delaware loophole where these big companies, I think, 74% of the companies in this state launder their money through.
Well, we learned something very interesting. Actually, the revenue secretary made a very important admission last week in a hearing. We have argued that, 74% of corporations in Pennsylvania pay no taxes whatsoever. And, the other side has said, well, hey, that's because they are not operating. All those businesses are not operating. We learned, in fact, is only 5 to 10% of them are not operating. So we've got a whole ton of businesses who are able to use the Delaware loophole, but other loopholes as well to hide their income, avoid paying taxes, and stick the rest of it for the bill.
And when they get to walk away from the table with their pockets full, who does that hurt?
Well, look, it's been very hard on working people. And here's the reality. You get it both ways. You get it with schools that are laying off teachers. The quality of instruction is going to go down. I heard a representative today talk about the fact that Allentown School District is going to lay off 334 teachers. I mean, what does this mean for our kids? We're going to have this lost generation of kids who are struggling unnecessarily with loss of all sorts of teachers, loss of classes, loss of arts, of music, of counselors, all so that we can continue to allow companies to avoid taxes. It's the worst. And then, if your school district or your county isn't making these cuts, what they're doing is they're raising your local property taxes. So you get it both ways.
Yeah, but for me, I got to be honest. If I'm a business owner, I don't want that kind of environment. I don't want that culture, because where am I going to get the next generation of skilled workers? Who's going to run my business? Who's going to do what I need to get done if they can't read and write, if they can't do simple critical thinking, problem-solving things? What do you do as a state when no business will come here because, you've defunded your education?
It's penny wise and pound foolish. It's short-sighted. It's really related to short-term profits. It's not related at all to Pennsylvania's economy. Look, here's the problem. We have given profitable businesses $3 billion in tax cuts already. $3 billion. We, over the time, we dropped from 29th in job growth to 34th in job growth. And the new numbers came out this week. Pennsylvania, over the last year, is now 49th in job growth. So insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And that's what we've got going on here. We're not creating any jobs, but we continue to cut taxes, hurt services, and raise local property taxes.
So the guy who came in saying he was all about jobs, 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 has only made it worse, worse, worse.
Worse, worse, worse. And, the governor said in his budget address, I haven't done anything to raise taxes on middle-class families. Well, that just ain't true. That ain't true.
Yeah, I mean, that dog doesn't hunt, to take a quote from the guy I talked to on the steps of the gun rally today.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole other story.
I wanted to talk to some of them over there. I want to see people who have that kind of anger and that kind of passion go, look, it's your governor who's screwing this stuff up. The reason we're in the shape we're in is because of the policies he's pushing forth. This austerity, this doesn't work. And we're seeing it in real time in Europe. As we speak right now, we're seeing it in real time. Why in the name of Sam are we even considering it?
It beats the heck out of me. I just don't get it. The companies would be perfectly happy to take the money that we're going to give them in tax cuts and move their investments to China, invest in Africa and Southeast Asia, So we're just giving a gift. It's coming at the taxpayers' expense.
Now, you said we gave them $3 billion. What could we have done with $3 billion in our budget? What kind of investment in infrastructure? What kind of investment in education? What kind of investment in transportation? I mean, I look at all of these needs that we have and all of the opportunity that we have right now to be, you know, the 21st century state, the one that leads into the future. And, you know, we're looking like going back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, it really does seem that way. Look, with that $3 billion, we could have maintained our support for public education, not gone through these horrific cuts. We actually could have done some work to ensure that all school districts get additional dollars. We could have put some money towards property tax relief in those areas that are really the property taxes are particularly high. We could have moved forward on the infrastructure investments 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we could have begun putting people back to work. But instead, you know, the governor had a commission. It reported. Nothing was done for a year. We're still now sitting here waiting for a bill to come out. The governor proposed a transportation plan. It was a half-hearted plan. So the members of the General Assembly are pushing something that's going to be more robust because it's good for business. It's good for workers. It's good for all of us. So that's what we could have done with the money. Instead, we gave a gift to shareholders around the world.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're Sharon Ward, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center. Their website, pbpc.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. I'll just click on Sharon's name. It'll take you right there. You know, I look at this and, you know, I ask the question, what should 440 have looked like? What is a reasonable way to close this so that we have fairness for all the companies? Because look, I think what you want in public policy is there to be a level playing field for everyone. But you know, I saw a statistic, 74% of the companies in this Commonwealth pay no state taxes. So you go, how can you have the highest tax rate one of the highest in the country if no one's paying it?
Well, you can't. And look, what should 440 have done? A couple of things. You know, the legislature wants to make changes to the business tax rate. I'm not entirely sure why. Site Selection magazine has ranked Pennsylvania in the top three for 4 years in a row in terms of new jobs or expansion. So let's start with that. In terms of, you know, we hear legislators saying all the time, we've got to cut our tax rate because companies aren't coming here. Well, that's just not true. They are coming here because we have an educated workforce, because we have a good school system, because we have a great university system. So what they needed to do was to enact something called combined reporting. Because we talk a lot about the Delaware loophole, but I can tell you that's just one loophole. There are a million of them. One of the things that we have is a document that was put together by Ernst & Young for Walmart. And they went through painstakingly the tax codes of all the states and identified all sorts of opportunities that were there for Walmart to exploit loopholes. We took that document, we brought it to the Revenue Department here in Pennsylvania, and they looked at it and they said, wow, we never even thought of half of these things. So it's pretty clear there's a big business in loopholes, and what we need to do is close them all. We can do that by combined reporting. If you do that, you can generate some additional revenue. You can kind of get companies to pay back what they've robbed from us over the past number of years. And I think legislatures should use some of that for schools, some of that for county services, and they can use some of it to reduce the rates for corporations if that's what they want to do. But they shouldn't make those tax cuts come out of the hides of school kids, and that's what's happening here.
How much of this, Sharon, is the fact that you've got lobbyists and people who've lobbied for these special interests over the rest of folks?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. You know, somebody can walk in and say, "Hey, this bill affects us badly," and so you need to do something about it. I think that's a big piece of it. I think the governor's no tax budget piece of it. I think there's an understanding that you can generate a lot of campaign contributions this way. And, you know, it puts the common person at a real disadvantage.
Now, I had read something earlier today that the governor's this plan, this House Bill 440, gives away something like $7 for every dollar that it generates. costing us about, well, I think $700 million a year. And you go, you know, that doesn't even sound like good sense. I mean, it just sounds like bad policy from the beginning.
Well, what's worse, Rick, is that the Commonwealth is pretty much in a position where it can't pay its bills right now. They're going into next budget year, and they're not even going to be able to make up the budget that they need to make up. They are giving away money left and right. And, you know, at the same time, they just can't pay for basic things. They're not making their pension contributions. We know all about that. They're putting a paltry sum into education. The governor's proposed $90 million. It's less than 2%. It's about a 1.3% increase. And, you know, so they want to rely on gimmicks like selling estate stores to raise money for education. That's not what we should be about. We should be about paying our bills, being responsible, being fair to middle-class families, and that's not what's happening.
Yeah, let me ask you a last line of questioning, because part of me thinks that all of this is by design, that we give away the tax base, we defund the schools, we put all the programs on life support, and then we turn give all the money away, turn around and say, well, we're broke, and we can't afford to fund the pensions anymore, so we need to get rid of that and screw the next generation of workers in the public sector, as the private sector has gotten away with, well, for at least a generation now.
Mm-hmm. Well, geez. You know, Grover Norquist said he wants to make government so small it can drown it in a bathtub. And, you know, what we're talking about is not government. What we're talking about is stuff that we need. I mean, most dollars that of our tax dollars don't go to something called government. They go to our libraries. They go to our water treatment plants. They go to our roads, our schools. They go to our colleges and universities. So, you know, we're just hurting ourselves. And, you know, unfortunately, they're getting away with it at this point. So I'm hopeful that we can stop this madness. I'm hopeful that in the Senate, cooler heads will prevail. People will figure out there that there's no money to spend on tax cuts. And, Rick, I got to tell you this. This is, you know, the governor says he wants to create jobs, 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 jobs. So this big tax cut bill in 10 years, will create 18,000 jobs. That's less than the number of jobs that the corporate administration killed off in 1 year. So what they ought to do is put the money in education. They can create 18,000 new jobs tomorrow, and that would be a better use of the dollar.
I'm right there with you. You know, the 20,000 education professionals across the state, and as you pointed out, there are every school district I hear people talk about. They're talking about more, 300 here, 75. I guess Pocono Mountain's going to see a whole bunch more all across the state because of this funding, that this defunding that's going on before us.
Yep. Yeah, it's just kind of madness. But people need to rise up, people need to take a stand.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I wish people would take to the streets and be as angry and as loud and boisterous as the guy screaming about, they're taking my guns, when nobody is taking his gun. What
yeah,
they are doing is they're taking my kids' education.
That's right.
Sharon, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you.
No problem, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Sharon Ward, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center. Quick break, right back. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
For the homeless, for the poor, who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game? From the master of the cloak and dagger.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone, by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
I like the word gobsmacked, because it sounds like what it means. Something completely astonishing, so unbelievable that it smacks you. For example, on April 3rd, ExxonMobil was scrambling to cope with thousands of barrels of tar sands oil oozing out of a ruptured pipeline in the town of Mayflower, Arkansas. The spreading toxic contamination from the oil giant's pipeline was awful, but hardly surprising, given Exxon's long record of reckless disregard for our environment, people, and communities. So, the gobsmacking news of April 3rd was not that America's most profitable corporation had yet another spewing disaster on its hands, but that something called the National Safety Council awarded its Green Cross for Safety Medal that very day to, guess who? The contaminator of Mayflower. Presenting the award during an event in Houston, NSC's president declared with a straight face, "It is evident that ExxonMobil is committed to excellence in safety, security, health, and environmental performance." Good grief. While Mayflower was covered in Exxon oil, Exxon was being covered with environmental praise. It was like giving a bird protection award to a smiling cat with feathers still stuck in its whiskers. What exactly is the National Safety Council? An industry front. In fact, the green in the Green Cross Award could refer to the color of money, for both the Exxon Corporation and its foundation were top donors to NSC last year. Indeed, the Oil Corporation has not one but two representatives on NSC's board of directors, making Exxon the awarder as well as the awardee of the Green Cross. Not to single it out, past awardee Dow Chemical is also a board member. This is Jim Hightower saying, apparently, NSC's paramount safety concern is for the PR image of its corporate funders.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Rich pay too much taxes, the poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, and he loves the free market. He loves the invisible hand of the invisible man who's been giving us the invisible finger for far too long. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So you'll remember, not too long ago, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, they warned the U.S., hey, you know, maybe you might want to reconsider those massive cuts to spending. Maybe you might want to, you know, think twice before imposing those severe spending cuts. Just a thought, because, you know, we realized that the model we used, little flawed. We had thought it would just take, you know, 50 cents out of the economy for every dollar you pulled out. Turns out it was 250. Oops, little small accounting error. Could have happened to anyone. Now you've got the European Union's Economic and Monetary Affairs Commission saying that, you know, maybe we should move away from that. Maybe it's a bad idea, considering the whole area is on the verge of another recession. Maybe it's an idea. Now you see the president of the European Commission, Jose Manuel Barroso, who is saying that, well, he's in favor of moving away from austerity. And you look at this and you go, if you see something's not working, and it's not working in a huge fashion, why do you continue? I mean, I look at the things going on here, and I think Sharon's right. If the governor wanted to create 20,000 jobs tomorrow, he could with the snap of a finger. The $3 billion that we've given away to big corporations so that they can have more profit and fatten their bottom line and enrich the shareholders globally. Why not take that $3 billion and put it into education, put it into infrastructure, put it into job training, whatever, but put it here so it generates economic activity here. You could easily create 20,000 jobs. In fact, you know, if you just took that $3 billion and put it into infrastructure, they say for every $1 billion you spend, you create somewhere between 40 and 42,000 jobs. Sounds like a good idea to me. And I found it interesting that, you know, that Sharon said that the Site Selection magazine has Pennsylvania number three. You know, why is that? Because we've got the top three things that site selection people want. Location, location, location. And then education, infrastructure. But you look at this, you know, and it just leaves me almost speechless. This governor ran in 2010 on that platform of jobs, jobs, jobs. And everything he has done has been the antithesis of creating jobs. What he has been is worse, worse, worse. He's been bad, bad, bad. And you look at the, you know, March had if you looked at the March job numbers, I don't know, that pretty much sums it up for me. The fact that something like 33,000 people from the labor pool just disappeared. And what you hear from the Department of Labor and Industry is, well, you know, it's a good thing because, you know, the unemployment rate went up because more people are looking for jobs. Wrong. Fact is, they lost 33,000 people. Don't know where they are. They're not on the, they're not looking for jobs. They're not in the, in the labor pool. And you saw this, this dip, about 14,000 people of employed folks. Unemployment dropped by 19,000. Why? Those people dropped off. Payroll shrank by 6,000 people. So, contracting. And as Mark Price over at the Keystone Research Center points out, in March, Pennsylvania ranked 49th in the nation, only ahead of Wyoming. And you go, when he took office, we were above the national average. We did okay after the Bush collapse because we didn't have the giant housing bubble. Did okay. This guy comes into office, it has been a steady, steady decline. Bad policy after bad policy, wasted opportunity after wasted opportunity. And what gets me is, here again, it's more of that redistribution of wealth. It's more of the wealthy get wealthier and everybody else gets screwed. And I look at this Pew Research poll. The Pew Research Center did a study and looked at the economic divide. And this new report they've got, the gap between the people at the very top and us. And what they found during the first 2 years of the recovery, because there was a recovery, folks. The economy turned around. There was a recovery. It's just that we didn't share in it. And we've talked about the Emmanuel Saez numbers that, you know, the top 1% took 93% of all new income gains in 2010. And in 2011, they took 121% of all the new income gains. Why? Because your wages went down. Well, what this Pew Research Center found is that the net worth of households in the upper 7% of wealth distribution. The top 7%, we're not talking just about the 1%, we're talking about that 7%, the folks at the top, they saw their wealth raised by 28%. People in that bottom 93%, you know what you saw? A decline of 4%. And you can go back and forth, you say, well, you know, this little subsection, the reality is, the people at the top, the 8 million folks at the very top with net worth of above $836,000 saw their wealth rise. They saw their aggregate wealth rise by $5.6 trillion. You know where most of that $5.6 trillion came from? Came from you. Came from working people through lower wages, through lower services, lower benefits. And you know the rest of us? You know the other 111 million households? You know what we saw? We saw our net aggregate wealth decline by $0.6 trillion. So here again, you're seeing this massive redistribution of wealth. And why? Well, because the stock market went up. The S&P over that two-year period went up by 34%. And who benefits from that? Well, the very top, the top of the pyramid. You and I, the people at the bottom, that other 93%, home prices, that's our house. That's our asset. We were told, buy a house. That's how you're gonna have some wealth. That's how you're going to have an asset. Well, according to S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index, housing prices dropped by 5%. So you saw your wealth decline. And you go and you look at some of the breakouts that caught my attention. The people who are in that net worth of over $500,000, they've got the mass of their wealth in financial holdings, stocks, bonds, stuff like that. You and me, it's our house. This didn't even look at the people who don't have a house. And you ask the question, what about people without a house? What about people without stocks? And I guess the answer is pretty simple. Screw them. That seems to be the answer that we're getting. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
For decades, astronomers have been saying that our home galaxy, the Milky Way, was destined to collide someday with the spiral galaxy next door in the direction of the constellation Andromeda.
Now that someday has been assigned a more precise number, 4 billion years from now. Astronomers base this number on painstaking Hubble Space Telescope measurements of the motion of the Andromeda galaxy.
The Andromeda Galaxy is now about 2.5 million light-years away, but it's inexorably falling toward the Milky Way under the mutual pull of gravity between the two galaxies and the invisible dark matter that surrounds them both. When the two galaxies collide, these astronomers say, our Milky Way will get a major makeover.
And that's not the end of the story. Astronomers also say that long ago, the Andromeda Galaxy closely encountered another large spiral galaxy in our local group. That's a collection of about 30 relatively nearby galaxies. We know this other galaxy is M33, or the Triangulum Galaxy. The astronomers say they can see a telltale bridge of gas between the two galaxies.
For a cool video showing what will happen to Earth's sky when the Milky Way and Andromeda collide, come to earthsky.org and search for Andromeda Galaxy. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the new dark age.
To the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. You can also email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, we've been talking about this thing out in Erie with the GE locomotive workers, and, you know, I called this back, you know, a year or so ago that you knew this was coming. You knew this dragging down was going to happen. And I look at this Caterpillar CEO, and I blame a lot of this on, well, It comes down to policy in D.C. It comes down to policy in places like Harrisburg. It comes down to which side of the capital-labor divide do you fall? And the sad reality is our governments all across this country and on the federal level are on the side of corporations and on the side of business, on the side of capital. And labor be damned. You're going to end up getting a screw job in all of this. The money's behind screwing workers, the think tanks, the pundits, the media structure, and most of our politicians. Look, we've got to do what we need to do for business because they're the job creators. Which is, you know, on so many levels, disingenuous at best. And I look at this Caterpillar CEO, this Douglas Oberhelm. 32% increase in his compensation from 2011 to 2012. Pocketed $22.4 million in 2012, up from $16.9 million in 2011. And you go, well, must have done a good job, right? Well, not so much. Fact of the matter is, in 2012, the third quarter, he had lower than expected earnings. So the stockholders, they didn't get to maximize their wealth. Which is what the CEO is supposed to do. But he's still got a nice fat raise. What their CEO did do is they put 700 people out of work when they shut down the electromotive diesel plant in Ontario. You remember, this is the one I talked about last year where they said, you take a 50-55% pay cut or we're moving to the United States. And they did. With that low wage structure. And they bullied 800 workers into taking major wage and benefit concessions in Joliet, Illinois. So again, you look at this and you go, okay, you got 800 workers to take massive pay cuts. You screwed 700 more out of half of their pay. Where do you think that money that the company quote unquote saved, where do you think it went? Well, it went to lavish pensions and golf club memberships and all of this stuff for the CEOs, for the wealth class, for that very tip of the top. And now you see in South Milwaukee, where you've got the Caterpillar management going, hey, you know, we got away with it in Ontario. We got away with it in Illinois. GE's trying to do it in Pennsylvania. Let's do it in Milwaukee. They are threatening to lay off 40% of their workforce. Unless you start taking those concessions. And for me, again, I go back and I look at this and I go, you know, here we've got these companies, these big behemoths that we created with our tax dollars, that we created with massive subsidies. Look, a lot of these places, get out of here. They started it on their own. I built this, my backside. It was huge tax investments. You show me a plant that's been built in the last 20 years that didn't have massive tax subsidies, huge tax abatements. You know, where I lived in Cleveland, they were giving away power, they were giving away sewer, they were giving away everything, the baby and the bathwater. That's why their school district's in such a shambles, because they gave away the tax base. And we're doing that everywhere, because, hey, if they're doing it, we got to do it. If they're stupid, we got to be stupid, too. And, you know, it goes back to what my mother always said, you know, if your friend's going to jump off a bridge, you going to go with him? The answer now is yes. The answer is if my friend's dumb enough or my co-state is dumb enough to screw them, I have to be dumb enough to do the same stupid thing, which is what we have been doing across this country. And before my very eyes, every day when I drive into work, every day I see it right in front of me, economic terrorism, as they're tearing down the Carlisle tire and wheel plant. Brick by brick, subsidy by subsidy, sweat, blood, people's lives gone, wiped away. All it is now is a pile of rock that they're scooping up and they're driving away. And why? Because another state was stupid. Here's $34 million. Please come. And you know how long they'll stay? Until their contract is up and they can get $34 million somewhere else and free land and free all of the stuff that comes with it. And the thing is you've got these big companies, these behemoths who have grown so large that they can hold not just people, not just families, but entire communities, entire states hostage, the entire nation hostage. Because, look, it's all about profit. Think about this. It's no longer about just busting the unions and screwing the workers and taking their money. It's about stealing their tax dollars, too. And then being unaccountable for all of it. I mean, haven't you had enough? I mean, at some point, you've got to go, wait a second. This is insanity. You know, as we see this going on and on and on. And I remember calling it, look, folks, this isn't a union, non-union issue. This is a workers' issue. The only reason that we're hearing about it in at Caterpillar or Electromotive or any of these companies is because they had a contract. They had workers who said, you know what? We want to have a contract. We want to know what the conditions are going to be over this period of time. We sat down and we negotiated. The only reason you're hearing it is because the company wants to break it. If these workers didn't have a contract, you wouldn't hear about any of this. Nobody would care. Because it would be imposed. And if you didn't like it, there's the door. And I had a really interesting conversation over the weekend. I had the opportunity to, I went over and visited a friend and they had a nice little party in their new man cave. Or it's actually the husband and wife cave. Because, you know, his wife loves the cave as well. But it's this beautiful place that, you know, we went over and had a couple of drinks and, you know, just talked. And I ended up talking to, you know, some guy who, rabid right-winger, it seemed, who said, well, if you don't like it, you could just go somewhere else. You don't have to work for anybody. I go, but, you know, that's really kind of the un-American mentality. You know, because he kept throwing up, well, you know, we can all agree that we're Americans. I go, well, I don't agree that that's American. I don't think that is. And, look, you know, my wife elbowed me, and that was the end of that conversation, because, look, you don't want to get into an argument at somebody else's house. But, you know, as I'm thinking about this, I'm going, you know, just shut up and go away is so un-American. What I believe is the American way, you don't like it, fix it. Someone's treating you wrong, fix it. It's that simple. You know, because the guy threw up, well, if your boss is treating you bad, go somewhere else. No, don't go somewhere else. Make that condition better. And even if you do leave, make it better for the next guy so that they don't have to go through it like you did. You know, what happened to that mentality? You know, we keep hearing people, you know, about, oh, you know, the American, you know, this and that. This country was founded on these. This country was founded on making this country a better place for the next generation, a better place for tomorrow. Looking towards the future with optimism, looking to the future with, hey, we can do and we will do. Instead of just going, well, the boss is a crummy a-hole, and I'm not going to stick around. Let him abuse somebody else. That's ridiculous. But that's the kind of power we've given these big companies. And they've sold us that mentality through propaganda that we see at the Tea Party think tank there, the Commonwealth Foundation, and their megaphone at the different talk radio programs in this area who are just rabid right-wingers spewing the propaganda that comes out of these hate tanks. I don't even like to call them think tanks. There's not much thinking going on. There's a lot of regurgitation. There's a lot of marching orders going, hey, you need to follow this. And they do. Sad stuff. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program thus far, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Also give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Quick break, right back with hour two.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Kenneth Paris, chief economist with the Communications Workers of America, says labor and environmental activists came away from the Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference in Washington last week with a strengthened understanding of the need to work together.
It's a coalition where environmentalists recognize that the rights of workers and decent paying jobs and to have the ability to choose whether to be a union member or not without fear is critical to improving the environment. And you have unions who have learned that improving the environment is critical on the job, in the community, for their families and for the globe, and that we have to work together to move forward where we have good jobs, green jobs.
Paris says America's infrastructure is decaying and much of it is antiquated. China has more efficient electric grids, losing far less power as it's transmitted. Paris says big investments in infrastructure would create good jobs while improving the environment and preparing the nation's infrastructure for the impact of climate change. He says the broken political process complicates progress, but the Blue-Green Alliance can help empower working progressives to fight effectively for change.
We need to form a broad progressive coalition, an alliance, a movement to empower citizens to be able to take part in the process, the political process, effectively.
23 striking Teamsters sanitation workers returned to work Monday at Republic Services landfill in Youngstown, Ohio. The union says the workers never wanted to strike, but the company's behavior left them no choice. There were national solidarity picket line extensions throughout the strike. The Teamsters say for them, this strike was about the company, Republic Services Allied Waste, breaking the law. The Teamsters have suspended the unfair labor practices strike at Youngstown. Workers in Colorado are a step closer to receiving more protections when a company uses a defensive lockout in contract negotiations. Under Colorado law, workers are already authorized to receive unemployment benefits when a company engages in an offensive lockout. Such a lockout is used by companies to pressure workers to accept a contract. A defensive contract lockout is when a company locks out their workers as a repercussion for workers within the same industry striking against another company. Such a tactic was employed by grocery chains King Soopers and Safeway in 1996. The two grocers were in joint contract negotiations, so when workers at King Soopers struck, Safeway took a defensive posture and locked out its workers. A bill currently meandering through the Colorado legislature would extend unemployment benefits to workers being targeted in a defensive lockout. That bill is opposed by grocery chains and Republicans, but strongly supported by labor organizations and Democrats. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Last week, Bill Schuster, the Republican from the middle of the state here in Pennsylvania, the chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, was speaking at an event special sponsored by the National Journal. And what caught my attention on it is, you know, hey, we need more privatization, only not so much. He said that he was interested in privatizing Amtrak, but in baby steps. Because, well, you know, they need to get up to speed and, you know, operating the equipment and the personnel and all that stuff. So you need to do it slowly. You know, so we can, there's a lot of ways, he says, a lot of different ways to bring, you know, Amtrak into the private sector. Why do we need to? He says he's not going to push for complete privatization. No. He only wants to privatize the Northeast Corridor. You know, the most profitable one. Sound familiar? Sounds like what Republicans have been doing for quite some time. Here to talk to us on Transportation Tuesday, our good friend Abe Amoros, legislative director with LIUNA here in Pennsylvania. Abe, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be with you, Rick. Thank you.
So does it sound familiar? We're not going to privatize all of Amtrak, just the most profitable part of it.
You know, they're just in love with privatizing anything these days. It seems as if they're looking for cheap political victories any way they can. And, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that they'd want to tap into all those resources and the profitability. I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, though. And this is nothing more than, you know, a classic case of a problem looking for a solution. I mean, it's absurd.
It's theft. It's a heist. This is a rip-off. We're going to sell off them like they tried to do in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Transit Authority.
Well, right.
There's a couple of private, or a couple of really profitable lines. Let's privatize those and saddle the rest of the transportation authority with the non-profitable rates, and then say, see, you can't compete, and let's get rid of all of it. I mean, it's the same wheel over and over again. And the sad reality is, we just don't seem to get it, evidently.
That's right, Rick. I mean, it's very frustrating to watch it because, I mean, these guys, they want to privatize just about anything, and that only weakens workers, only weakens the middle class, and it takes away opportunities. I mean, I don't know why these guys are in the pockets of the Chamber of Commerce when it comes to these things, but they certainly aren't looking for the best interest of workers. I mean, privatizing today seems to be the catchphrase for every Republican out there. Let's privatize this. Let's privatize the lottery. Let's privatize the state liquor store system. I mean, pretty soon they're going to start wanting to privatize the public school system, and they already started that, of course, with charter schools and some other ventures. But good grief, I mean, enough is enough.
Well, I'll tell you why they're in the pockets of the Chamber of Commerce. The pockets are deep and filled with lots of money.
Yes.
I mean, it's that simple. It's all about the cash and policy and people. You be damned. It's about the money.
That's exactly right. I was reading a publication in Washington today that stated that the Chamber of Commerce spent $10 million in lobbying Washington just in the first quarter.
Yep.
$10 million just in the first quarter, which represents half of what they did in the first quarter last year because it was an election year. These are scary numbers and should be a wake-up call to our members that grassroots organizations are more important today than they ever have been, because there's just no way we're going to compete with the Chamber of Commerce and its deep pockets. It's just impossible.
Well, the sad thing,
you're talking $40 million a year minimum.
But the sad thing is with that, Abe, that $10 million represents pennies from what they get back. And all of the it's always amazed me at how little they spend on, I mean, $10 million, don't get me wrong, is a lot of money. But what they get back is not in the millions, it's in the hundreds of millions or billions. So for return on investment, these business people, they know we're going to spend a little bit money, put a little money in these folks' pockets. They're going to get us policy that's going to benefit us, you know, like the Delaware loophole where we've been able to walk away billions of dollars over the years, just a little campaign cash. To me, that's what's so perverse about this whole situation.
Yeah, right, and that's the proper word to use is perverse, because basically they're just buying off votes and policies, and bad policies at that. They're not giving it a second thought to what it's going to mean in terms of putting food on the table for working families. I mean, that's secondary to that green stuff that goes directly into their campaign accounts, and it's absolutely obscene.
Yeah, you know, have you seen this letter from the Honorable Pat Toomey that he wrote for the Commonwealth Foundation, the Tea Party think tank here in the area?
Yes.
Pimping for money? I mean, is this not despicable?
Yes. That's right. And unfortunately, sadly, Rick, that's come to that in today's political world. It looks like the cash is king and everyone else's interests come secondary or just completely forgotten about. The good government types don't exist anymore. Everything in Washington, everything in Harrisburg has basically come to the bottom line in terms of lining their pockets, lining their political action committees, and it's a dangerous, dangerous thing. Unless real reform takes place, but more importantly, there has to be a collective sense of outrage by those individuals who are paying attention, because this is not the way government was set up, and it's not the intent of the founding fathers, clearly. And it's just getting worse on a daily basis.
You know, I look at this letter from our esteemed senator, pimping money for the Commonwealth Foundation, the Tea Party think tank, who's going to go after workers. I mean, their main goal is, let's see how bad we can screw workers, like has happened in Michigan and Ohio and in Wisconsin. And you go, well, what comes out of that? Well, what comes out of it is legislation like this proposal from John Eichelberger. who the promoting fairness and taxpayer protection in collective bargaining, wanting to steal collective bargaining rights from people that we're right now calling heroes, cops and firefighters. And I find it despicable that, you know, here it is, days after you've got what happened in Boston, you've got this, hey, let's steal collective bargaining rights from our cops and firefighters.
That's right. I mean, that takes a certain sense of gravitas. I was appalled when I saw that, Rick. I couldn't believe that this senator would have the audacity to commit this to paper and circulate it as a co-sponsorship memo. And, I mean, but this is what we have today, this gall, this amount of arrogance. And of course, I mean, they're going to go after the police, they're going to go after the fire, and then what's going to go next? Everyone else's collective bargaining agreements are going to follow just after that, simply because he's starting off with the two most difficult ones because of what you said, police and fire, particularly today, on Tuesday, April the 23rd. I mean, days after what happened in Boston, I mean, they're still viewed as heroes, as they should be. But, I mean, if they go after those guys, if they go after those individuals, I mean, imagine what's going to come after that. It's going to be an avalanche.
Yeah. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Abe Amaro, legislative director for LIUNA. You know, Abe, I know you're in D.C. doing some work for LIUNA and for workers in your union. And you know, one of the things that I keep seeing pop up, and today there were a number of hearings on the immigration debate. I'm curious, you know, where do you see this whole thing going?
You know, that's an excellent question, Rick, because I my eyes were open a little bit today. I am seeing that the ideology is beginning to soften up somewhat based upon the economic reality, particularly here in Pennsylvania. I was talking to the chief of staff of Congressman Glenn Thompson, who represents 17 counties in Pennsylvania in the 5th Congressional District. And the reality is there are a lot of companies and a lot of industries out there, particularly in agriculture, that are looking at immigrant labor. And what they want to do is create a path to citizenship. Of course, they all say the same thing. We don't want to go overboard. We don't want to provide blanket amnesty. But what I'm seeing and what I saw today was a willingness to learn more about the issue of immigration without getting crazy and start talking about Mexicans crossing the border and killing people, that crazy nonsense, but looking at it more in terms of an economic reality, that these employers, Rick, right or wrong, are still going after that kind of labor. And there is no shortage of individuals who want to work in these industries. I mean, listen, in the dairy industry, cows need to be milked 365 days a year. They don't take vacations. They don't take off for holidays. And they still need to be worked on a daily basis. And there are plenty of individuals who are willing to take on those jobs. It also creates an opportunity for organized labor later down the road when they have citizenship or when they're on that path to citizenship to really make a difference in their lives by creating opportunities to provide them with better paying wages. Because let's be honest here, they're not getting fair wages.
Yep.
And employers know that. And, you know, this fellow was completely candid with me, and he said, look, they're exploiting each other. The work is there, the labor is there, and they exploit each other. Why don't we take that out of the shadows and create a path to citizenship, which allows individuals to become productive members of society, and at the same time acknowledge that their children are United States citizens, should remain in this country legally, and to be able to provide something in return. I mean, you're going to have college students that are going to stick around in the state because we do have a brain drain. And this guy even went as far as saying, look, we're having a problem with people leaving the district. I mean, we have an emigration problem more than an immigration problem, particularly in Pennsylvania. So it was an interesting day. And what has to happen, Rick, is there has to be a good, solid, comprehensive bill that comes out of the Senate first. And, of course, they have until August, because if this does not pass by August when they go into recess, the likelihood of them taking it up in the fall
done
is going to be small, yeah, simply because of reelection time for next year, which is going to, you know, just basically catapult this issue as a lightning rod for bad things. So something has to be done. They're doing it quietly. And interestingly enough, I also heard that what happened in Boston, as tragic as it was, also rang a bell for some kind of immigration reform to do as much as possible to ensure that, those things don't happen again, especially around immigration issues.
Here's my problem, maybe. You know,
yes.
You look at this, and my greatest fear in this is it's going to be another opportunity for unscrupulous employers to bring in floods of labor, going to flood the labor pool, and here we're going to have this drop in wages even further, and drop in conditions and all of that. So my fear is that we're going to see this massive influx that's going to, you know, the bottom out the labor pool, and also make these folks more exploitable, because I don't know how these guest worker programs are going to be set up. I don't know how this stuff's going to be. The devil's really in the details, because I'm thinking back to the Bush years where they're saying, hey, let's have this guest worker program and we can tip them so we know where they are all the time. And I go, as soon as you start letting any class of worker, you start letting that happen to them, eventually you're next. So for me, it's got to be, there's got to be a platform where I don't care what your status, if you're on your way here, whatever, the job has to pay a reasonable wage. The job has to be one that's covered by OSHA and covered by labor laws. To me, that's the point.
That's exactly right, Rick. I was speaking to Congresswoman Allison Schwartz today, who said that she was also concerned about a guest worker program because of what you just mentioned, because of the lack of OSHA standards, a lack of good working environment. And what I think of, Rick, are those mushroom workers in Chester County that work in absolutely deplorable conditions for peanuts. Yeah. on the dollar. I mean, it's just incredible. And so I, too, am concerned about what you said, simply because when wages are depressed, the entire community becomes depressed, not just non-union workers, but everybody. And so we have to really take this seriously, and we need to put pressure on our members of Congress to do the right thing, pass comprehensive immigration reform before August, so then the House can take a look at it and pass something that's reasonable, that makes sense. Because ultimately what we want to do is continue to raise the middle class and continue to raise wages and opportunities for everyone. And one congressman even went as far as saying, look, this is going to help us make Social Security more sustainable. Yep. In the future, by having more citizens paying into the fund. So it's a win-win, but it has to be done in the next several months, or else that window is going to close again and we're going to be right back at it in 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
And all of the other programs, unemployment, workers' comp, all of those things that employers are now, who are using this kind of labor, who are getting away with not paying.
That's exactly right. Yes, everyone is being exploited, including citizens.
Let me ask you the obvious question then, because now you're saying that a lot of these Republicans are having this grand conversion. They've seen the light. They've had this epiphany, if you will. How much of it is based in you know, voter politics?
Quite a bit of it. Quite a bit of it. I was talking to a staff person for a congressman whose district has shifted. And so begrudgingly, she admitted to me that he is now taking a closer look at the issue because the district has shifted. So the cynic in me says, okay, they're looking at these poor brown people as potential voters now, not just those that are going to become productive members of society and good citizens that pay taxes, but also votes as well. So don't think for one minute that they're doing this out of the kindness of their heart, because the sliver of cynicism is still ever present with those Republicans. I mean, you know, this is not about doing the right thing with them. It is with us, because we know that increasing the middle class benefits everyone, that everyone deserves an opportunity to succeed as long as they do it legally and they do it by the book. But, you know, these guys, hey, they're looking at it as votes as well. There's no question about it.
Yeah, last question I've got for you, because, you know, I hear a lot of this rhetoric about, wow, they got to leave and come back and get to the end of the line. That's not even plausible. I don't see how it's possible. I don't see how it's functional. There's just no way. I mean, there's got to be a way of around that. What are you hearing people talking about?
Well, there's a lot of resentment. There's a lot of anger out there, and a lot of misinformation on the Latino community, the undocumented community. And I say Latino because that's really where the basis comes from. But there's a lot of misinformation out there on the dynamics of these workers. They don't go back to Mexico. They don't go back to the Dominican Republic when it's off-season. I mean, what they're trying to do is make a better life for their family, just like the original immigrants of this country did
That and they can't afford to because they're not making that kind of money.
That's exactly right, Rick. That's right. So there's a lot of misinformation out there on the dynamics. But to get back to your point, there's just no way that the people are going to be able to leave, come back, and get in the back of the line again. There has to be a fairer way, a better way, a better path to citizenship so then everyone can enjoy the fruits of the American dream.
And the other part of this for me, real quick, is, you know, maybe we work on a trade policy that actually benefits both countries, U.S. and Mexico, so people have industry there. Maybe give them their farming community back. You know, just a thought.
That's right. I mean, everything should be on the table. Everything that's reasonable and plausible should be on the table.
Yep, good point. Abe, I always appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our good friend Abe Amoros, Legislative Director for the Pennsylvania LIUNA. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? Ask Me members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
I like the word gobsmacked because it sounds like what it means, something completely astonishing, so unbelievable that it smacked you. For example, on April 3rd, ExxonMobil was scrambling to cope with thousands of barrels of tar sands oil oozing out of a ruptured pipeline in the town of Mayflower, Arkansas. The spreading toxic contamination from the oil giant's pipeline was awful, but hardly surprising, given Exxon's long record of reckless disregard for our environment, people, and communities. So, the gobsmacking news of April 3rd was not that America's most profitable corporation had yet another spewing disaster on its hands, but that something called the National Safety Council awarded its Green Cross for Safety Medal that very day to, guess who? The contaminator of Mayflower. Presenting the award during an event in Houston, NSC's president declared with a straight face, "It is evident that ExxonMobil is committed to excellence in safety, security, health, and environmental performance." Good grief. While Mayflower was covered in Exxon oil, Exxon was being covered with environmental praise. It was like giving a bird protection award to a smiling cat with feathers still stuck in its whiskers. What exactly is the National Safety Council? An industry front. In fact, the green in the Green Cross Award could refer to the color of money for both the Exxon Corporation and its foundation were top donors to NSC last year. Indeed, the Oil Corporation has not one but two representatives on NSC's board of directors, making Exxon the awarder as well as the awardee of the Green Cross. Not to single that out, past awardee Dow Chemical is also a board member. This is Jim Hightower saying, apparently, NSC's paramount safety concern is for the PR image of its corporate funders.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
In fact, I was in a meeting in Wall Street, Rick, and it was a pretty stunning meeting because we were talking with them about, you know, how can we get more private investment in infrastructure? And they said, pay us. And you have to pay us not just the cost of the capital, like, you know, $50 million to rebuild I-80. You got to pay us for the profit that we would lose by putting that money elsewhere.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Roy Beck, the founder of radical group Numbers USA. They're one of the nation's most hardline anti-immigration groups here in the country. And I guess he's been out doing the talk radio circuit, did about 10 programs, I guess yesterday, today. What I found interesting about one of his statements, he was asked about, you know, why he's out doing this. He says, you know, what he's doing is, well, it's kind of dehumanizing. It's tiring. He says it's a little bit like being at a day labor site. You know, kind of like being a day laborer. You know, the guy who was asking the question said, or like speed dating. He goes, well, it's like that. That's true. But it's like a day labor site. You're just there. A little pickup drives by, drives real slowly. And I go, I'm available. I'm cheap. And you go, you didn't just say that, did you? These folks just don't get the whole scenario. The fact that he admits these are cheap labor is part of the whole problem, in my view. Look, I don't care who's doing the job. Here's the end result of this. When these big companies and when these unscrupulous folks bring in exploitable labor, it hurts us all. It hurts everybody. It hurts them, and it hurts us by pulling down the conditions. We know that. We've learned that through generations of this happening. And this is nothing new. We have done it with every wave of immigrants that's come into this country. My great-great-great-grandparents went through it. Your great-great-great-grandparents or great-grandparents or whatever all went through it. My ancestors were Irish. Some were Irish, some were German. When the Irish, they came, they were looked at just like when the Italians came, same thing. It's part of the how things go in this country, but that doesn't make it right. And who ends up benefiting are those sitting at the very top. Who ends up suffering? Well, us down at the bottom. And I always go back to that quote by Jay Gould. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half because we've divided it. Sliced and diced, subsections, subdivisions, for the sole purpose of pitting each other against one another. And I've always been a believer in the idea that, you know what, we protect the job. I don't care who's doing it. It's got to pay a decent family-sustaining wage. I don't care who's doing it. It's that simple. If you're going to live in this country, there's a standard of living that we should encourage, that we should be pushing for, and that's what the wage pays. You want to do business in this country, you follow the rules. If you don't follow the rules, you don't do business in this country. And we don't let you sell your products here. We've given so much control and so much power over to these big corporations to do whatever the hell they want to do. You want to put a fertilizer plant 500 feet from a school? Go right ahead. I mean, think of how much we've given away. Think of how much power we've given these big companies. And I'm not talking about the little mom and pops, because you know what? They're getting screwed too, because they're the ones being gobbled up by these big behemoths. We need a trust buster. We need Teddy Roosevelt again. You want to talk about a decent Republican? Bring me back Teddy Roosevelt. Dig him up. Sad stuff, folks. We've given too much control. Too much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
Earth, sky.
For decades, astronomers have been saying that our home galaxy, the Milky Way, was destined to collide someday with the spiral galaxy next door in the direction of the constellation Andromeda.
Now that someday has been assigned a more precise number, 4 billion years from now. Astronomers base this number on painstaking Hubble Space Telescope measurements of the motion of the Andromeda Galaxy.
The Andromeda Galaxy is now about 2.5 million light-years away, but it's inexorably falling toward the Milky Way under the mutual pull of gravity between the two galaxies and the invisible dark matter that surrounds them both. When the two galaxies collide, these astronomers say, our Milky Way will get a major makeover.
And that's not the end of the story. Astronomers also say that long ago, the Andromeda Galaxy closely encountered another large spiral galaxy in our local group. That's a collection of about 30 relatively nearby galaxies. We know this other galaxy is M33, or the Triangulum Galaxy. The astronomers say they can see a telltale bridge of gas between the two galaxies.
For a cool video showing what will happen to Earth's sky when the Milky Way and Andromeda collide, come to earthsky.org and search for Andromeda Galaxy. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Heaven knocking on the door that holds the throne. Heaven looking for the map that leads me home. Heaven somewhere on good hearts turned to stone. The road of good intentions is gonna drive some home. We take care of our own.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. According to a report back in 2012 by the AFL-CIO titled Death on the Job, the Toll of Neglect, they cited that in 2010 there were 4,690 workers killed on the job, an average of 13 workers each and every day. They also estimated that some 50,000 workers die every year from occupational diseases, although we don't keep track of that very often. Not much. Only the people who are crushed by rolls of steel or fall from ladders and are killed on the job because of unsafe working conditions. And you look at this thing in West Texas. Now the official toll is up to 15 workers killed on the job with more than 200 injured. And you look at this explosion, a place where you're talking about a school, a nursing home, and a hospital, all within 2,500 feet of this bomb site. They say that the explosion left a crater 93 feet wide by 10 feet deep. You have this 2,500 feet from a school, a nursing home, and a hospital. Something seriously wrong with what's going on. And really our oversight, the zoning laws, OSHA, you name it. Here to talk to us about this situation and the direction our country is going is Celeste Montfortin. She's a lecturer at George Washington University. Celeste, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, my pleasure to be with you today.
You know, I look at these numbers and heartbreaking on so many levels because I believe that nobody should go to work and not come home because of something that I think is preventable.
Absolutely. And when we talk about these 4,700 workers killed on the job every year, when investigations are done of those, many, the vast majority are found to have been, there were man-made causes. These accidents could have been prevented. And I feel confident that when the investigators finish their work in West Texas, we'll find the same thing, that shortcuts were taken, that maintenance wasn't done properly, that there were, numerous contributing factors, but all man-made, that led to that disaster.
And for me, it comes back down to this issue of oversight. Look, I saw a story that said the last time this place had seen an OSHA inspector was 1985. And you go, exactly what are they afraid of? I mean, to me, OSHA is like a cop on the beat. They might come, so we've got to keep things up to snuff because we don't want to get caught. We want to do the right thing because we have to. I mean, a lot of people are not going to do it because, well, we can cut corners and make extra money, which is why I think you need this regulatory body. You need this oversight. You need this control.
Rick, I like your analogy about the cop on the beat, and that only works if you think the cop is actually there. And so if people hear that OSHA or realize that OSHA, hasn't been in a particular facility, for 28 years, there's not much fear that there's a cop on the beat. And so we really are out of whack in terms of the resources that our country devotes to our regulatory agencies, particularly like agencies like OSHA, where they have so few inspectors that they're likely to get to a workplace with current funding once every 100 years. So there's not a lot of fear out there in the business community that OSHA's going to show up on their doorstep.
And the other part of this is that even when they do, the fines are paltry and there's a system set up where they can avoid it. I look at the MSHA stuff with the mine explosions where, you have the Blankenships of the world who were just tying, and really the whole coal industry, whenever they would get a fine, they would just tie the system up to where, there aren't enough judges, there aren't enough inspectors, there aren't enough people to prosecute. So they just jam the system up and, you got one side defunding it, another side jamming it up. No wonder it doesn't work right.
Yeah, exactly. No wonder why it doesn't work. And I think you're right on the money with the mining example, because they would have inspections and have penalties assessed, but then they jam it up because they would challenge them, and this would go on for 3 or 4 years, and so the inspectors really hamstrung at their ability to put in more stringent sanctions on these employers because they were all still tied up in court.
Yeah, I mean, in any And what seems now is any discussion about, hey, and maybe this is going to be an opportunity. I don't know. You're the expert. Maybe you'll have a better view on this than I do. Because I think now's the time to be having this conversation of, do we need more inspectors? I look at the guy who's the head of OSHA. I don't know that there's anything he could have done differently with the resources that have been taken from him more than given to him. But, you know, I don't know what anyone can do in that situation, given the magnitude of the need and the amount of tools they actually have to get the job done.
Right. You know what, though, Rick? We used to act when people died, whether it was, you know, in transportation incidents or these industrial catastrophes. We used to act as a country. After the mining disaster in 1968 when 78 miners died, you know, we passed the Mine Act. And then right after that, you know, the OSHA Act. After Bhopal in 1984, we put in place the right to know laws and community emergency response. But it seems more and more our lawmakers are unwilling to act. There's so much pressure from the business community and a lot of rhetoric that, you know, regulations affect businesses, that we can't do that. It's been 3 years since the Upper Big Branch disaster and the Deepwater Horizon explosion, and no laws have been put in place since those disasters 3 years ago.
Yeah, and I look at this, and, you know, we keep hearing, oh, it's the job killers. You know, I love Michelle Bachmann, who says all the time, oh, you know, we should just call it, well, here it is.
What we need to do is pass the mother of all repeal bills, but it's the repeal bill that will get of job-killing regulations. And I would begin with the EPA, because there is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job-Killing Organization of America.
Yeah, they're just job killers, all those regulations. Don't you know, Celeste?
Unbelievable. You know, there's a really important regulation that EPA has on the books regarding community right to know. It may need to be revisited after this incident in West Texas, but it basically says that your local fire departments, many of which have volunteers, need to know what kind of chemicals and processes are going on in facilities. And I will be paying close attention to find out what those volunteer firefighters knew about what was in that plant before they went and responded to the fire.
And that's an excellent point, a question to ask, because, you know, according to the report put out by the AFL-CIO, the death on the job report, some 50,000 people a year killed because of occupational illnesses caused by something just like that. You and firefighters entering into a burning plant. You don't know exactly what you're being exposed to. And it may be 10, 20, 30 years down the road that you develop cancer from this. And who are you going to go after?
Right. I was just reading the state of Michigan is proposing to cover cancer for firefighters under workers' compensation. And, of course, there's a lot of pushback in the state from the business community to do that. But for that exact reason, that these firefighters, you don't know all what the mix of all those toxins will be. And then 20, 30 years down the road when you develop cancer, how you're going to cover your expenses related to that.
Yeah, we did that last year here in Pennsylvania. And the reporting requirement of all this seems to me to be a bit onerous, that you're going to have to prove and go through it, that you were exposed to this on this date. And it's a lot of long-term record keeping, but at least there's an avenue for firefighters to have in the event that they get cancer because of this kind of stuff.
I think about the firefighters, the little bit I've been able to read about these volunteer firefighters in West Texas. And these were working people. You know, one guy was a waiter. There were a couple guys that were welders. You know, these were working class people who also, you know, had this commitment and devotion to being volunteer firefighters and put their lives on the line for to try to put out that fire and potentially prevent the explosion. This is really in, you know, the heartland of America, and it's just so unfortunate that at the same time that we can honor the workers, that there's still so much rhetoric that's anti-regulatory, as if that's going to harm the people that it's actually designed to protect.
So let me ask you, you know, in looking at this, you know, What course is this town going to have? I mean, you look at the zoning laws, I saw a map of it within 2,500 feet, and even closer than that, you had a school, you had a nursing home and a hospital within 2,500 feet of this plant. All of the damage that it's done for miles around, the exposure to the entire town. What recourse is this town going to have against this company?
That is an excellent question. You know, I don't know. The company at one point said it couldn't pay one of its EPA fines, so I'm not sure how much resources is there that the company will be able to put into both building back the town but compensating, you know, for those buildings and structures. I also don't know, Rick, and perhaps you do, because these were volunteer firefighters, does workers' compensation even apply to them?
I don't know.
Weren't employees. You know, will there be some benefit that would be given to, you know, their survivors?
I believe Pennsylvania has something. I seriously would doubt that Texas would.
Right.
It's a whole other animal. And to me, it's a foreign concept that you would have a school within 500 feet of this facility that blew up, leaving a 93-foot wide hole 10 feet deep.
It really is incomprehensible, and you think about, like, zoning, but I'm living in Texas now, and zoning is like a four-letter word. I mean, it's not something that's favored. But when you think about it, it's something that's designed to protect people from these types of hazards, industrial facilities. It just seems like common sense to me that you wouldn't want to be siting schools and nursing homes next to facilities that have tons of aluminum nitrate.
But then again, you know, I look at West Virginia where they've got these slurry pits that are dammed up, and at the bottom of the hill where the footer is leaking of these massive slurry pits, you've got a school at the bottom of it, and they say that when the dam gives way, the school is going to be wiped out. Not a matter of if, just when it happens.
Right.
And I go back to all of this insanity of this, we need to be more business friendly, we hear, because they're the job creators. But, you know, the reality is you look at the damage that they've done, and who's going to ultimately be responsible for all of this destruction, all of these tragedies? It comes back down to you and me and all the other taxpayers.
Right. It's going to be, you know, the society and the community is going to end up paying for this, and not the responsible parties, the employer or the business community that creates this environment where it's such an anti-regulatory environment.
Let me ask you this, you know, because I'm a firm believer of that the vast majority of injuries and the vast majority of deaths on the job are avoidable. It's a matter of having the right processes in place and really holding people accountable so that they don't put people into positions where they have to decide between their safety and their productivity. I'm curious your thought.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. In my experience in disaster investigations are that these are 100% preventable. There are very few acts of God, and oftentimes it's not just the physical or the chemical hazards. There are often other factors going on in the workplace, pushes for production, cutting corners, lack of investment in maintenance that can contributes also to these catastrophic events.
Yeah, and that's the perfect one right there, because, you know, when I started reading some of the early stories on this, they had been fined for a leak in the past, and you wonder how often that happens and how often there's a leak. Oh, just put some duct tape on it, that'll stop
mm-hmm.
it. And you wonder how many corners were cut for the sake of pure profit by not doing preventative maintenance, by not updating and not repairing things before they go bad.
Right, and I have a lot of confidence in the Chemical Safety Board, which is a very small agency. It only has a budget of $10 million, but they're one of the lead agencies that will be doing the investigation down in West Texas at the fertilizer plant. And I think that one opportunity they have is because the plant was closed for the day and only the one foreman was still on the site, they should have an opportunity to interview the 7 to 10 employees of what was going on there that day at the plant in the weeks before this fire and explosion, what the situation was in terms of what was being stored in the facility, how top-notch was the maintenance or not, and we should be able to get a good picture of what was going on there in the facility and what these contributing factors are that led to this disaster.
Yeah, and I'm completely confident that you're right and we will find out, but here's my problem with that. Nobody's going to jail, in my view, over this. Nobody's going to be ultimately held accountable. And you've got 15 families who are without husbands and wives.
I agree with you. Probably no one's going to jail, although people could go to jail. I mean, the little bit, I'm not a lawyer, but the little bit I've read about some of the disclosures that the company made, they never disclosed the amount of aluminum nitrate they had. You know, there could be criminal violations for them falsifying records that they submitted to the EPA. And so if you had a district attorney who wanted to pursue criminal violations, I think they probably could. Now, in the situation in Texas, I mean, they're not, or in other places in the country, not so gung-ho about going after, you know, a small business in an agricultural community. And so I agree with you, probably no one will go to jail, but I think that if you had the right attitude from a district attorney, they certainly could pursue such charges if they wanted to.
There's the key, if they wanted to. Last question I've
right.
got for you. You know, we've talked about how we handle things here in the U.S. and the regulatory oversight that I believe is far too lax. I'm curious, are any other countries doing it better, or are most of them doing it the same or worse than we are? Because I've made the argument for years that you see a lot of companies who, even as weak as our regulatory agencies are and the oversight is, they want to go somewhere where it's even more lax so that they can exploit those regulations or lack thereof. I'm curious how you think other countries are doing.
Well, I think that there's two extremes. One, you can have countries which have completely lax and very, you know, much less oversight than we do, and you have companies who will try to escape to those shores because they can avoid the regulations. But there are other countries, particularly in the European Union and the Norwegian countries, that particularly when you're talking about workplaces with highly hazardous chemicals, they have kind of a different strategy for addressing those, and companies basically have to demonstrate before they're authorized to even start up a facility that they've made the safety case that this plant can operate in a safe way, that they've really evaluated all the potential risks, all the scenarios that might occur, and that they have procedures in place to address them. And so on the front end of planning for their facility, they've kind of walked through all the consequences that might occur, and they call that making the safety case. And they present that to the regulatory body that has to be sufficiently funded and competent, and the regulatory body makes a determination whether the facility has made the safety case, or whether they can operate in a particular facility. I mean, in a particular, you know, if they can get that facility up and running. Right. I think we're a far cry from that in the U.S. for that type of regulatory scenario.
Yeah, well, it's all about business friendly. You know, it still blows my mind, Celeste. 500 feet is a school, an elementary school.
Right.
500 feet from a place that exploded, 93-foot wide crater by 10 feet deep. That it's almost impossible for me to put my mind around that.
It's pretty unfathomable to think about the lack of zoning in this situation.
Just nuts. But I appreciate your time. I appreciate your input. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rick. Have a good evening.
Great talking with you. Celeste Monfort, professor and lecturer at George Washington University. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around.
This is why we fight, why.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but know They're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by Ask Me Council 13.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together, we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
I know many of you are going to be interested in this next subject. Pennsylvania sits within a day's drive of 60% of the nation's population. Every year, nearly $500 billion worth of goods and services move through our state transportation system. Transportation is the bloodstream of our economy. If it fails, our economy fails. However, as you know, the average bridge in our state is 51 years old.
The walls, come tumble it down. The walls, come tumble it from there.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So you look at this explosion, it's just mind-blowing. 93 feet around, 93-foot crater, 10 feet deep, this explosion. You've got a school 500 feet away. Did no one think this through? And there's part of me that goes, you know, nobody really cares because it comes down to the money. And you look at, and someone has done a mock-up of the amount of money that the Agricultural Retailers Association and the Fertilizer Institute have spent on lobbying. Because you know what, we can't have any oversight of those things. No, we can't have it. According to the report, since 1998, the Agricultural Retailers Association has spent almost $3 million on lobbying. And the Fertilizer Institute, about $14.5 million, according to Influence Explorer. And you look at this, and you know their website, their disclosure, pretty clear. Opposition to the EPA fertilizer safety. Opposition to it. And I go back, and I start thinking, you know, at some point we've got to wake up and realize it's these special interests. And, you know, I go back to Federalist number 10, where you talk about factions splintering this nation apart. It's the moneyed factions. It's the moneyed interests who are causing these splits, causing these divides, and pitting us against one another. And what you end up with quite often is tragedy, and then us picking up all the mess. Let's take a quick break. Right back with Hour 3. If you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Right back after this.
Oh, 90% of the world. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Oh, 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
This is Brett, Rick's producer. He's not back yet, but he will be on Thursday. We apologize for the inconvenience, and if you need to contact us, email rick@therickSmithShow.com.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Kenneth Paris, chief economist with the Communications Workers of America, says labor and environmental activists came away from the Blue-Green Alliance Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference in Washington last week with a strengthened understanding of the need to work together.
It's a coalition where environmentalists recognize that the rights of workers and decent paying jobs and to have the ability to choose whether to be a union member or not without fear is critical to improving the environment. And you have unions who have learned that improving the environment is critical on the job, in the community, for their families and for the globe, and that we have to work together to move forward where we have good jobs, green jobs.
Paris says America's infrastructure is decaying and much of it is antiquated. China has more efficient electric grids, losing far less power as it's transmitted. Paris says big investments in infrastructure would create good jobs while improving the environment and preparing the nation's infrastructure for the impact of climate change. He says the broken political process complicates progress, but the Blue-Green Alliance can help empower working progressives to fight effectively for change.
We need to form a broad progressive coalition, an alliance, a movement to empower citizens to be able to take part in the process, the political process, effectively.
23 striking Teamsters sanitation workers returned to work Monday at Republic Services landfill in Youngstown, Ohio. The union says the workers never wanted to strike, but the company's behavior left them no choice. There were national solidarity picket line extensions throughout the strike. The Teamsters say for them, this strike was about the company, Republic Services Allied Waste, breaking the law. The Teamsters have suspended the unfair labor practices strike at Youngstown. Workers in Colorado are a step closer to receiving more protections when a company uses a defensive lockout in contract negotiations. Under Colorado law, workers are already authorized to receive unemployment benefits when a company engages in an offensive lockout. Such a lockout is used by companies to pressure workers to accept a contract. A defensive contract lockout is when a company locks out their workers as a repercussion for workers within the same industry striking against another company. Such a tactic was employed by grocery chains King Soopers and Safeway in 1996. The two grocers were in joint contract negotiations, so when workers at King Soopers struck, Safeway took a defensive posture and locked out its workers. A bill currently meandering through the Colorado legislature would extend unemployment benefits to workers being targeted in a defensive lockout. That bill is opposed by grocery chains and Republicans, but strongly supported by labor organizations and Democrats. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
In the end, Wall Street, with Obama, Duncan, Bloomberg, Walcott, and Goldstein as its agents, they want to turn public education into private, profitable businesses. They hope to impose factory regime of managerial control over educators' working conditions and our students, our children's learning conditions.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember last week, I think it was Wednesday, we talked about the students at Blue Mountain High School in Schuylkill County who, well, they said, you know what, we're not happy about the layoffs that are coming to our teachers. We're not happy about the program cuts. We're not happy about the $1.4 million budget deficit and the way that it's being proposed that, well, we slash programs, teachers, all of that stuff. So nearly 1,000 of them walked out of school. The first bell happened. They walked to the football field in protest. To protest this stuff. And I've been saying this is what's going to have to happen all across the country. Enough of this defunding of education and really enough of this standardized test, these high-stakes standardized tests that are solely designed to label schools failing so that you can defund them and then, of course, charterize and eventually privatize them. So across the country, when I see students saying, you know what, enough is enough, organizing, taking to the streets, got to have him on the program, which is why I've asked one of the Chicago students, Brian Sturgis, tomorrow, I guess, they're going to be boycotting day two of their state's standardized tests. Brian, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
So tell me, what are you guys doing?
Well, we're a student-led organization. We're called the Chicago Students Organizing to Save Our Schools. And we've been holding a couple of actions throughout the city lately. One was a press conference, and we delivered a oversized letter to the mayor expressing why we didn't want our schools closed and expressing the demands of the CPS students. And we had other marches and rallies and protests, and we were ignored, ultimately. So the latest action we've come up with is a boycott, and we plan to boycott the second day of PSAE testing. This is called the Work Keys Test. And the Work Keys test, it isn't a graduation requirement. In order to promote to the 12th grade and eventually graduate, you have to sit in for one day of this two-day test consisting of the ACT and the PSAE test. So all students, when they took the ACT today, they don't have to show up for the PSAE tomorrow, and they'll still be promoted. But this test is only used to judge how you will work in their world. I guess I'll keep it that simple. How well you'll fit as working as a cashier at Walmart versus you being a hairstylist in someone's salon. It's really not beneficial to your future. They don't put it on your transcripts. Colleges don't look at your Work Keys test score, but this is a test that they use to judge your school, as you were saying earlier, to see what kind of funding you get and ultimately close your school down. So we've decided to boycott it.
And good for you. And I'm one of the parents here in this state that decided I didn't want my kids taking these standardized tests either, because what I've come to realize is that the only reason that they've put them into place is to destroy my kids' school, to defund it. And you know, the moment for me was, you know, I've got an 11 or 10 year old, she's going to turn 11, teaching her younger brother and sister to the test. Say, you know, telling her 4-year-old sister and her 6-year-old brother, if you don't pass this, they're going to defund our school and close the doors. And I'm going, this is insanity. This is not what education is about, teaching them to take some stupid test. To me, education is about learning and learning to love to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to teach students things that will benefit them in the future. We don't get taught anything in school that's going to benefit us. Once we leave those doors, it's, you know, what they want us to learn, what they want to teach us, what they want to put in the books for us to learn. We don't learn anything that is really beneficial to our outer lives. And it's so frustrating, and I wish we could learn more, and I wish we could do more. But in Chicago, we're under-resourced. In some classes, we don't have the books. We just don't have the things that we need to excel. And then you throw tests at us on a daily basis that we don't get, you know, any notice of or any warning of. So you come into school one day expecting it to be a day, and you have an assessment in your first and second period class. Oh, you know, I figured I'd be able to go to my AP calculus class or go to my science class. If I have to take this state mandated test that I got no warning of, you don't know what my living situation is, what I had to go through to get here, you know, what's going on with my mom, my parents, what my physical struggles are. All you know is that I'm a student and you want me to take this test. It's completely ridiculous.
Now, what are you expecting the repercussions to be? Does the school know? I mean, do the administrators know that this is being organized, that this is going to happen? And what do you expect the fallout to be, if any?
Well, actually, they do. CPS has released a letter through the Chicago Tribune saying that they have recognized that there is a boycott. They sent out robocalls to all junior parents and sent out a letter to all the juniors attempting to express to them how important this test is to their future, but really only showing the importance of the ACT. They couldn't find any real relevance for the PSAE test, the second day to work ease test. But, yeah, really showing the importance of the ACT test. So they're trying to scare us. They've been using scare tactics, calling in the principals at the school saying that we will be punished for this. But we've went into the student code of conduct and we've done our research and learned that this can only be considered a ditch day for students. And the repercussions for a ditch day is only the highest offense for it can only be in-school detention. If it went any higher than that, it may be an in-school suspension. But the highest thing you can get is either in-school suspension or detention. You can't be suspended for this.
What do your parents think?
My parents?
Yeah, what do your parents think of this?
Oh, my mom's totally down for it. She loves the idea of students standing up for what they feel is right. I'm a senior in high school, so I took the ACT last year, and I took the work keys test last year, and I really didn't see the relevance when I took the test. I mean, it's just, you know, just another test that they throw us. And I was so upset because I had to take another day of testing. The ACT being so critical and as complicated as it is, it's like you just throw this pointless test at me the next day and give me no good reason for taking it. So my mom is, she's extremely, totally with the idea of protesting and boycotting this test.
Good, because you know one of the things that I worry about is because as parents, we want our kids to get the best education we can. We want to make sure that that they're learning. We want to know that they're learning, and we've been sold this bill of goods that these tests are somehow going to assess how well our kids are doing in class and what they need to work on. But as I've come to discover, the tests here anyway, the results aren't for several months down the road. They're not used for diagnostic purposes. They're solely used to determine funding and labeling my kid's school, not helping my kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big concern that we have, and that's a big problem that we have. As students, we always say the stuff that's on these tests is never what we're taught in class. So it's almost like rocket science. Once they put the test in front of us, it's like, whoa, when did you teach us this? It's like you're assessing what we've learned in class, so you tell us, but this is nothing that we've learned in class. So what are you really doing with the test? And then later on down the line, as you said, we learned that this is all about funding, labeling us as a level one school versus a level three school, pegging us to close versus leaving us open. We learned down the line that it's all about the money.
Well, I wish you the best. Good for you. Good luck on this, and I hope that I hope more people join you tomorrow for the boycott of the second day of that test. Thank you so much, Brian.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk to another Chicago student. Israel Munez is another one of the students there in the district who will be boycotting tomorrow's standardized test day. Israel, thanks for taking time for me.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So, you know, explain to me, why are you in this?
So, right now I'm a senior at Thomas Kelly High School, and the reason why we're boycotting the second day of PSAE testing is because, you know, we've been lied to, essentially. They tell us that this test is used to determine, per se, how good of a worker we'll be. In fact, this test is used to evaluate our teachers, our principal, evaluate our school as a whole. And it's also used to put our schools on probation. Now, my school has been on probation for many years, and because of that, funding has been reduced. And because this funding has been reduced, I have been limited to the amount of resources that I need in my education. So that's essentially why I'm boycotting this test and advocating for this boycott as well.
Good for you. You know, you said something that just caught And Brian said it before as well about this PSAE test, that it's going to tell you how good of a worker you're going to be. I got to be honest with you, Israel. I don't want to train good little workers. I want to train critical thinking, problem solving citizens. And I don't see that this is it.
I'm sorry, what was that?
And I don't see that these tests do that. The sad thing is you've identified this as to judge how well of a worker you're going to be. That seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, that concept is, you know, I find that concept to be incredibly absurd. And aside from that, what happens is that, you know, we spend weeks, even months at a time preparing for these tests, which is just ridiculous because that takes away from all the classroom time that we actually deserve. So rather than learning science or learning another subject, we're prepping for a test. We're wasting our time, and that's completely unfair, and that's taken away from what education really is.
So let me ask you, how did you organize this? How many people do you expect? What are the baselines here?
Yeah, so we have about 10 high schools participating in this boycott. What we've been doing is that we've been having regional meetings where, I guess you could say, student leaders have been coming, meeting, organizing, saying what we want to do, how we're going to do it, things like that. And so these organizers go back to their schools. They have, I guess you could say, a core of organizers per school, and you just reach out to as many students, tell them to come, why we're doing it, and we plan it, and then we execute it. So that's pretty much how things have been going for us. We're looking to get more centralized, but it's only been a few months since we initiated the Chicago Students Organizing to Save Our Schools. But these first steps that we're taking right now, they seem extremely productive.
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope a large number of students and their parents realize that this is important. I'm curious, how do your parents feel about it?
Yeah, so I've spoken to my parents about this test. I mean, they may not understand the concepts of the school just because, well, first of all, I'm a first-generation Latino here in Chicago. So the educational system that my parents had as teenagers is completely different. So, I've been telling them the wrongs of these tests and the wrongs in our educational system, and they've come to understand it better, and they've been in full support of me.
Yeah, I think, Israel, I think that the point is that the good majority of parents in this country, they think the school is just like when they went to school. And it was a rude awakening for me to realize that where my kids are going, it's not the same as when I was in school.
Yeah, definitely. In the past few years, our educational system has, it's taken a lot of shifts, and it's pretty much, it's changed fundamentally since, in the last 30, 20 years since when our parents were in school, or when you were in school, per se.
I look at this, and I go back to, the reaction of the school district. What kind of feedback, what kind of reaction have you gotten personally from the administration, from teachers? Where's the feeling? Where's the sentiment?
Okay, so we've gotten both sides of the argument. Teachers are actually, most of them are actually in full support of this just because they hate these tests and they recognize that students aren't standard. Each student learns at different, each student learns differently, and these standardized tests do not really test our talents. Aside from that, what was I saying?
Well, the standardized.
I lost my train of thought. Yeah, can you restate the question?
Yeah, the test. You said the tests don't test your abilities, and the feedback that you'd gotten from teachers, the feedback you'd gotten from administrators.
Right.
Have you gotten any threats from anyone that this is going to go on your permanent record for the rest of your life and following you to the day you die and all of that stuff?
Not yet. But I was actually just before this call. I was online. I was on Facebook, and I saw an article by the Chicago Sun-Times. So the Chicago Sun-Times wrote an article addressing to the students not to be part of this boycott, that those who do boycott will probably not be able to take a retake for the exam. It is a state-mandated exam, but the state also mandates a retake on May 8th. So what they're threatening to do is saying students who boycott are not going to be able to do the retake and therefore will not be able to graduate. So that's their big threat on us. But honestly, it's a big lie. The state mandates it, not CPS. And we have lawyers there to assure that students' rights are protected.
Good, good. I got to tell you, Israel, you're scaring the hell out of people. The fact that you've got young people who are standing together, you've got high school students who are coming together because, the knock on the next generation is only in it for themselves in their own little digital world, all separated, to see kids, the 1,000 at the Blue Mountain School District, just up the road from here who went to the football field in protest of budget cuts, scaring the hell out of people. When the powers to be see folks like you and people in the streets, they get worried, and hopefully we'll see some action.
Definitely. I think that the response that CPS has given us with all of these warnings is actually just a reflection of how good our work is. once they start taking us seriously, that's when we know that we're creating an impact. So, yeah. They, and aside from that, students all across the country that we've been networking with as well have been taking similar initiatives. So now this is becoming a movement that isn't just local anymore, but this is a movement that's interconnected city by city, state by state. And, yeah.
And that's got to make you feel
seeing some real progress.
That kind of empowerment's got to make you feel pretty good.
Definitely. I think this may be something that may stir up a revolution pretty soon.
From your words, Israel Munoz, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight. Keep up the great work. I'd love to talk to you again when this is over.
Definitely. Will do.
Thanks so much. You know, I look at this, and again, it goes back to, you know, I think back when I told my daughter she didn't have to take the test, and she walked in and said, my dad said, I'm not taking them. That kind of empowerment, that kind of strength. That's what we need more of. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I see the blue for me and you. And I say to myself, oh, the world.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
I like the word gobsmacked because it sounds like what it means. Something completely astonishing, so unbelievable that it smacks you. For example, on April 3rd, ExxonMobil was scrambling to cope with thousands of barrels of tar sands oil oozing out of a ruptured pipeline in the town of Mayflower, Arkansas. The spreading toxic contamination from the oil giant's pipeline was awful, but hardly surprising, given Exxon's long record of reckless disregard for our environment, people, and communities. So, the gobsmacking news of April 3rd was not that America's most profitable corporation had yet another spewing disaster on its hands, but that something called the National Safety Council awarded its Green Cross for Safety Medal that very day to, guess who? The contaminator of Mayflower. Presenting the award during an event in Houston, NSC's president declared with a straight face, "It is evident that ExxonMobil is committed to excellence in safety, security, health, and environmental performance." Good grief. While Mayflower was covered in Exxon oil, Exxon was being covered with environmental praise. It was like giving a bird protection award to a smiling cat with feathers still stuck in its whiskers. What exactly is the National Safety Council? An industry front. In fact, the green in the Green Cross Award could refer to the color of money, for both the Exxon Corporation and its foundation were top donors to NSC last year. Indeed, the Oil Corporation has not one but two representatives on NSC's board of directors, making Exxon the awarder as well as the awardee of the Green Cross. Not to single it out, past awardee Dow Chemical is also a board member. This is Jim Hightower saying, apparently, NSC's paramount safety concern is for the PR image of its corporate funders.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
The walls, don't crumble it down. The walls, don't crumble it, crumble it. The walls, don't crumble it, crumble it down.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, I look at that, and, you know, good for those kids, man. Good for the fact that they're willing to stand up and say, you know what, these tests are stupid. They're and both kids said, this is about assessing what kind of a worker I'm going to be. Really? That's the goal? And I guess maybe I just have a very different idea of what education should be, of what it is and what it should be. And, you know, what we're doing, not in my view the right thing. And I guess I understand it from one point of view, where you want to train little robots who do their little tasks. And maybe it's just I read too many of those sci-fi books back when I was in school, The Brave New Worlds and all of that, where we train the alphas, the betas, and the epsilons. And you have a whole bunch, an idiot society who just walks through their day drugged all day long so that they know nothing other than their little task. Kind of makes me wonder how many of the people making policy in this country have read those books too. And those are their playbooks. You look at 1984. I mean, how can you make an argument that that's not someone's playbook? Sad, sad, sad stuff. Anyway, good news today. At least in my view, good news. Democratic Senator Max Baucus from Montana announced he will not seek a seventh term next year. He's going to step down. I guess he took a bunch of heat from the party and, you know, over the gun thing. Because he, you know, look, Montana, gun state. Now look, here, this is where I talk about that divide. You know, growing up in an urban environment where people with guns shoot people, Montana, not that urban environment. Kind of rural. And the idea that a gun is a, you know, coffee table item or something to hang on the wall or something to play with, not to shoot people, but I get. So when, you know, he voted against it, I got it. But for me, my Max Baucus hatred comes from the whole healthcare debate. Here is a guy who did everything in his power to make sure that single payer was never discussed. In fact, if I remember right, and I do, he had threatened with arrest people who dared to have the audacity to say, hey, we'd like a hearing on single payers. If we're considering healthcare options, if we're just talking about how we're going to revamp the healthcare system, maybe single payer would not be a bad idea. Let's talk about it. And as I've said from the beginning, I'm a big supporter of open up Medicare. Let me buy into Medicare. You know what that would do? Well, it would help us solve our problems. It would help us solve whatever fiscal problems, because you bring healthy people in who would pay some of the freight. Thoughts? Huh? Never considered. So Max is going to step down. I guess it was first reported by the Washington Post and confirmed by the AP. Now that he's stepping down, there's an opportunity. And I think Brian Schweitzer, the governor, since he seems to be a fairly progressive guy, a populist, if you will, a single-payer advocate, someone who championed the idea that maybe we should be re-importing drugs from Canada, maybe, or elsewhere, wherever, you know, wherever we make them, to kind of bring some competition to the drug world, just a thought. He seems to me to be the guy who would be the front runner, and the hope is he throws his hat into the ring. I haven't seen that yet, but, you know, at the end of it, anything, in my view, anything better than Baucus. I mean, I think of all the things that he's scuttled over the years. Wow, you know, whether it's tax policy, whether it's health care, whether it's the guns, I mean, just so much. Now, what's troublesome for me is this next senatorial election season, 2014, you're going to see 21 Democrats defending their seats against 14 Republicans. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's like six open seats that Democrats could lose. And, you know, the Republicans need to win six seats so that they could take control of the Senate. I hope that doesn't happen. But I would love to see Brian Schweitzer as that replacement there. Granted, look, you know, at the end of the day, not perfect, but closer than Baucus. I guess as close to perfect as you're going to get out of a place like Montana. Just a thought. I'd like to see Brian Schweitzer here instead of Pat Toomey. And, you know, I think about, I can't get this letter that he wrote for the Commonwealth Foundation, the Tea Party think tank. I just can't get it off of my head. I just can't get it out of my mind. The fact that, you know, he was one of their board of directors from 2007 until he was elected in 2010. Because, well, they're champions of the free market and the limited government. And I love how he finishes it up. Please join me in support of the Tea Party think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation, because together we can transform Pennsylvania for freedom. And you gotta love good platitude, right? You gotta love a nonsense statement that, you know, makes you want to pump your chest and go, yeah, freedom. Freedom to go hungry, freedom to breathe horrible air, freedom to drink polluted water. You know, that kind of freedom. Because everyone needs the freedom to die of a horrible disease and the liberty to choke and not eat, right? Which is basically what the Tea Party think tank advocates for. Oh, man. And the policies that they push. You know, you go down the list of all of the ALEC legislation, all of the right-wing nonsense, and they're at the center of it in this state. And I'm telling you, folks, all of those attacks we saw in Wisconsin, all of that stuff you saw in Michigan, it's coming here. All of that ugliness is coming here. And that divide between the haves and the have-nots is going to grow wider and wider and wider. Until we don't have to worry about the middle class anymore, because there won't be one. We don't have to worry about health care, because you won't have it. We won't have to worry about a pension, because it won't be there. It's been stolen. Don't worry about it. Once we're all a third world country, then we can go back to the idea of empire. Because then you'll have to join the army. Then you'll have to just to eat. I mean, this isn't rocket science. You look at history. They're creating a permanent underclass, a permanent desperation class to fight their wars and pursue their imperialism. This is nothing new. Nothing new at all. And I think back to Thomas Jefferson, who said, you know, you shouldn't have to risk your life for a sixpence. It's not the nation we want. We shouldn't have to go and be willing to die in a foreign land or die fighting someone else's battle just so you can feed your family. Something seriously wrong with the direction we're taking. And you look at the policy and the legislation coming out of these Republicans right now. Should scare you. I don't care what party you are. Should scare you to death. Because you know what? While they're telling us it's about jobs, while they're telling us about, oh, we care and we love mom and apple pie and the flag, what they're doing, well, they're stepping in the apple pie, kicking mom in the behind and tearing the flag to bits. All for a couple shekels for themselves, a little bit of coin for themselves, and that next lobby gig. Kind of makes you shake your head. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. All they want to do is add up and take your money.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together, we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
So, you know, I'm looking at this story about John McCain. The Hill is reporting that McCain, the woman, Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, not happy with the Obama administration, said they should have labeled him an enemy combatant, shouldn't have allowed him to be Mirandized. And why? Well, because then we'll no longer ever be able to ask him questions. And I, you know, as I'm reading this, my head's about to explode, because have they never watched Law and Order? Have they never watched any of those things? Just because they Mirandize you doesn't mean they can't ask you questions. It's just telling you what your rights are. And I just scratch my head and go, you know, gotta watch more bad TV, evidently. Maybe it is, our senators don't. Maybe it is. I don't know. But so what would they, just take him into a back room and beat him? They shot him enough. Personally, my thoughts aside. Anyway, let's find out what's going on in Washington and around the world. I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
So, you know, you look at this. Should they have Mirandized him, or should they send him to Guantanamo so they could waterboard him?
Well, I think they actually, when they finally charged him, they did Mirandize him.
Yeah, I mean, they used the exemption for public safety. And on Monday, as I understand it, they had a federal judge, actually read him his rights. But what Graham and Ayotte and McCain are saying was they shouldn't have Mirandized him. They should make him an enemy combatant. And, you know, that whole citizens thing, that doesn't really matter in this case. And, you know, for me, it's these cases, it's this stuff now that makes me go, hold on, that citizenship, that kind of matters. That Constitution thing kind of matters.
I think it matters a whole lot.
And it blows my mind that you've got these three going, no, we should have, you know, a U.S. citizen, like it or not, he was a citizen. There's rights. just saying.
Absolutely.
You know, didn't you read, you remember watching Law and Order? You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you according to the law. You have the right to an attorney. If you can't afford one, we'll give you one. Remember that?
Yes, of course. But
it doesn't
I didn't see it on Law and Order.
It doesn't say that.
I've never seen Law and Order. Oh. Isn't that terrible?
Or Dragnet. How's that?
Okay.
Joe
that's
Friday.
About my speed.
All right. But, you know, the whole thing is doesn't mean that you can't ask them questions. And look, do you think he was dumb enough to go, oh, I haven't been Mirandized. I'm going to not talk to you, or I'm going to talk to you, or come on. The guy, if he's not going to talk, he's not going to talk, whether you read him those rights or not.
Well, he is talking, and apparently he said that he and his brother acted alone.
And is that credible, you think? Because my thought is...
I mean, I'll tell you. What really has me flipped out is that on the 9/11/2011, there were three men in Waltham, young people in their 20s, whose throats were slit. And they've never found who did this. the official date of death was 11/12, but the families all say that their last, I guess it was a baseball game or something, that their last communication was at around 8:15 that evening, and they had been texting each other. And it turns out that suspect number one was their friend, one of their good friends, best friend. He never went to the funeral, never contacted these people's parents. What do you think?
And did the police
interview? And the police never interviewed
never,
him.
Never.
And these were three Jewish kids. Give me a break.
Yeah. You know, the question then is,
I don't think this is rocket science.
No, I mean, and how much of it is our police departments fell down, how much it is the FBI fell down, how much of it is the intelligence community, you know, didn't follow up, because we're looking for brown skin guys.
Right. Interesting, huh?
Yeah. And for me, at the end of this, you know, I'm as despicable as this crime was, the guy still has rights. And I would say that about
absolutely.
Anybody.
Absolutely. And if we give into those rights, then the terrorists.
Yeah. Well, we lose who we are. And I just, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not going there. Anyway, so let's move on. The FAA, the furloughs causing havoc, well, slowing down the plane traffic. What's the word?
Well, it depends who you hear. The White House says that, and they gave very credible figures today. They basically said that the Department of Transportation had $1 billion they had to get rid of under sequestration till October 1st. $677 million comes from the FAA. They have gotten rid of their temporary employees. 70% of the FAA budget is personnel. They had to do it this way. Now, it's interesting that the Republicans are saying, well, the president has discretion. He doesn't have to deal with this cutback in the air. But the White House is saying, where do you want us to get this? These are all these people that are dealing essentially in direct service.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is what you guys wanted. This is what you made happen. Here we are in this. And look, I blame the president for giving them the austerity bomb that they would let go of. And now that it has, you know, I find it ironic that they're going, see, you haven't done anything. But you're the ones who caused this mess.
Right.
So I see that Senator Blumenthal and Senator Moran have a bill, the Protect Our Skies Act.
Right, and that they're trying to deal with this. I mean, a lot of people are saying the only way you're going to deal with sequestration is to do it add-ons to other bills as amendments.
Okay, and where is this going to get us? And by the time this what's the chances of this getting passed? Or it's passed the House especially.
Well, you know, again, I don't know. My guess is that almost nothing is getting passed these days, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah. I saw the Amazon loophole went through the Senate. That got through.
Well, but again, is that going to get through the House where things are very, very regional?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be one of the...
I don't think so either. That's really where people, you know, I don't think people realize that some of these issues are not so much Democratic and Republican, they're regional issues.
Yeah. And I look at, you know, the Senate, I guess, put out they've got a budget finally, a couple of years in the making, and the House is saying, well, we're not going to even consider it.
That's right. I mean, and what's interesting is that here you have Ms. Steny Hoyer, who is really not a very partisan person, even though he's a Democrat, because I've even seen him at a private fundraiser, and he just doesn't play that game. But he's saying they don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, they want the talking point. And does that mean now that the Senate has passed a budget that they'll stop with, well, they don't have a budget?
Right. Don't know.
Well, we'll see, because that's one of the things that's been driving me nuts. I mean, they've put out, the president's put out things, and they've shot it down, and then they go, well, he doesn't have a plan. Well, he had one. You just shot it down.
He had a very clear plan, and the plan is to deal with cutting things down, and he was very specific. and they just don't want to deal with it. They'd rather say, you know, sequestration is the president's fault and he's causing the airline delays.
Because here's the thing that gets me, Ellen. You know, I look at this, and you look at what's going on in Europe right now. And there are people over there saying, look, the numbers are in. Austerity does not work. Slice and dice, cut, gut, and punish, whatever you want to say, taking money out of the economy does not work. So why are we hell-bent on doing all of the negative things that they have done to help their country? They're on the verge of a triple-dip recession. Why would we follow that?
Well, because we have no other models, because our Congress doesn't take enough time to really look at other models.
We have other models. We have get people back to work, build stuff. Where's the infrastructure plan? Where's the manufacturing plan? How do we get people back to work? It's one thing to say, well, we're going to create jobs, 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 and then do nothing, nothing, nothing. It's another thing to say, okay, we've got an idea. We need to build some things, some big things. I'm in favor of building a damn fence at this point. I don't care. Just build something. Fence isn't going to work, but at least we'll be putting people back to work.
Well, infrastructure work, as you know, does work.
Absolutely. But here again, you know, and it's something that used to be bipartisan. It's something that used to be nonpartisan. It was, hey, my constituents need roads and bridges. Let's do that. Now it's so much of we don't want the other guy to look good.
Well, that's the problem, is that it's perpetual running, and, you know, this country will go to hell in a handbasket if we don't work together and stop this partisanship. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And I look at this jockeying going on over the immigration bill right now, and you go, you got the people who hate anybody who doesn't look like them. And on the other hand, you got, hey, we need cheap labor. The cheapest labor we can get. Let's import all kinds of cheap labor so our businesses will give us more money.
Right.
At least that's the way I see it. Am I missing anything?
Not that I know of, honestly. I mean, I think you're absolutely correct. And I think that the problem is really, how do you make Republicans realize they're not helping the country?
And I've come back to this point, Ellen, and at the end of the day, that I view that the current Republican Party as extremists with a scorched earth mentality, like when my kids were 2 and 3 years old. If they didn't get their way, they laid on the ground, kicked and screamed, held their breath until they passed out. It's just how it is. And the consequences be damned. Whether there are kids here in Harrisburg starving, or they're homeless, or there are sinkholes swallowing up cars in Chicago, it doesn't matter. They didn't get their way. Everybody else be damned.
Well, they're not going to get reelected, although we've got real problems with Max Baucus being the sixth. You know, his is going to be the sixth district.
I'm happy he's going.
He's not my favorite human being either, but
I think there's an
excellent... They may replace him. Well, it'd be good if a Democrat wins that seat.
I think Brian Schweitzer is going to have he's going to have that seat. That's the guy I'd like to see, the former governor there of Montana.
He's a very nice guy.
I mean, he's a real progressive guy, and there are some things that you go, okay, well, you're not going to get him any progress on the gun issue, because he's a big gun guy, and he's a big coal guy, so the environmentalists probably won't like him. But on single payer, right there, man. And that's somebody that I find it ironic that here you got Schweitzer, who's a big single payer guy, and Baucus, who's the guy who scuttled any chance of having single payer.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I think that, look, he announced he's clearly after that seat. Let's hope he gets it.
Yep, I'm hopeful.
The Republicans have to. I mean, the Democrats have six open seats that they have to deal with.
Yeah. So let's move along. I guess does Syria have chemical weapons? Is what I'm
we
hearing?
We don't know. The White House says that they are looking into it. They're looking for verification. It's very serious if they have them and have used them. We know they have them. The question is, have they used them?
Yeah, and what if they have?
Well, you know, the president said he was going to do something about it, so we don't know what he's going to do.
Now, does that mean boots on the ground? Does that mean what?
I have no idea, and the White House is not saying.
Yeah, because, you know, I've talked to some people who say, you know, if you think Iraq was fun, you know, try that.
Right, exactly.
And finally, I see Anthony Weiner's back on Twitter, almost 2 years to the date.
He's back on Twitter, and he's probably running for mayor.
Good for him. I would venture to say anyone but Christine Quinn at this point.
That's what most people are saying.
That's what I hear. Ellen, it's always great talking with you.
Thank you.
Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. In the plan we have defended from all things that are good. Now we are defenseless.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Earth, sky.
For decades, astronomers have been saying that our home galaxy, the Milky Way, was destined to collide someday with the spiral galaxy next door in the direction of the constellation Andromeda.
Now that someday has been assigned a more precise number, 4 billion years from now. Astronomers base this number on painstaking Hubble Space Telescope measurements of the motion of the Andromeda galaxy.
The Andromeda Galaxy is now about 2.5 million light-years away, but it's inexorably falling toward the Milky Way under the mutual pull of gravity between the two galaxies and the invisible dark matter that surrounds them both. When the two galaxies collide, these astronomers say, our Milky Way will get a major makeover.
And that's not the end of the story. Astronomers also say that long ago, the Andromeda Galaxy closely encountered another large spiral galaxy in our local group. That's a collection of about 30 relatively nearby galaxies. We know this other galaxy is M33, or the Triangulum Galaxy. The astronomers say they can see a telltale bridge of gas between the two galaxies.
For a cool video showing what will happen to Earth's sky when the Milky Way and Andromeda collide, come to earthsky.org and search for Andromeda Galaxy. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, some good news. The National Partnership for Women and Families, they're pushing for a paid family leave act. Do a little bit of lobbying. I like seeing this kind of stuff. Look, ain't going to happen. Given the Congress that we have now, not going to happen. But in my view, you've got to keep pushing this stuff. This is what the right wing has done masterfully. Think about some of the anti-worker hate bills that have been going through legislatures across this country. 20 years ago, never in a million years would you have said Michigan would pursue a right-to-work law. Because they knew instinctively it meant their demise. It meant lower wages. It meant no benefits. It meant no future. Yet here we are. The moneyed interests. Well, they pounded away and kept pushing it and kept saying, hey, you know, the reason the economy's struggling is those people, those Goliath, the big union people. They're the ones that are the reason your job went away. It's those people, the reason that your standard of living is declining. It's those people over there. And of course, don't forget those people, the poor ones, you know, they're pulling you down too. So those rich union people are pushing you down, and those poor people there, they're dragging you down. It's beautiful. I mean, it's brilliant messaging. It gives people that they can see, people, someone to blame that they can see. Because how many of us have seen one of the Fortune 500 CEOs? You don't see those people anymore. They don't shop in the same grocery store you shop in. They don't walk down the same mall that you walk in. They don't wear the same kind of shoes, same clothes. They live in an entirely different world. Now, back when my grandfather was in his prime working years, you know, the guy who owned his company, the guy who owned the company that he worked for, the guy who was the big CEO then, lived in the same neighborhood. Maybe in a nicer house, but the same neighborhood. That guy's kids went to the same school that his kids went to. They lived unequal, but similar lives. And I've told the story a number of times. If you know, my grandfather, and he had to save up for it. Look, you know, it's not something they got to do often, but, you know, my grandmother wanted to go see a play down at Playhouse Square. You know, wanted to see, you know, oh, let's get dressed up. And so my grandfather, for their anniversary, okay, we'll go to a fancy restaurant. We'll go see the play, made reservations, got there on time like they're supposed to, like the reservation. Boss showed up, you know, thought he was going to get ahead. They honored the reservation. My grandparents sat down, had their meal. They got over to the play, sat down on time. Curtain went up. There are two seats next to them. Empty. You'll never guess who the two seats belong to. Well, the boss and his wife. And my grandfather, you know, he talked about that a couple of times to me. He said, you know, that's when you knew they didn't want to be in the same neighborhoods. They didn't want us around. They wanted us to work for them, but they didn't want us sitting in the same theaters or eating in the same restaurants. They didn't want that. They thought they were better than that. And here we are. I mean, stop and think about really where we've come in the last 40, 50 years. We don't sit in the same restaurants. We don't go to the same theaters. We don't patronize the same establishments. We don't have the same healthcare system. We don't have the same education system. We're not even in similar neighborhoods. And that's because you've had 40, 50 years of the very wealthy in this country pushing and dividing us and keeping us fighting amongst each other. So that we don't look to them and go, hey, you know, the guy we can't see, you know, the guy whose income has skyrocketed, the fact that 7%, the top 7% saw their wealth grow by 28%, and the rest of us, the 93% at the bottom, saw an actual decline in our wealth. Don't focus on that. No, don't worry about that. Forget that. And for the love of God, don't ever consider policies that would benefit poor people, benefit working people. My goodness, no, that would mean the end of civilization. And I look at the Family Medical Leave Act as one of those, and I remember arguing it during the Clinton years, saying there's got to be some monetary part to this. When you take the time off, file for unemployment, something. Get something into people's pockets so they can take it. And the sad reality is even as meager as that is, there's no money in it. 40% of the workforce is not even covered by the Family Medical Leave Act. And the rest of the people who are covered by it can't afford it. So I'm glad to see that there are some people out there saying, you know, we need to be pushing for family values, pushing for family-friendly policy. Just a thought. Because, you know, I was fortunate when my kids were born, I was fortunate enough to be able to take the Family Medical Leave Act. I was fortunate enough to save up some money and not devastate our budgets. Because I do believe in family values. I'm one of the most family values people you will ever meet. Because when my daughter and when my kids came into this world, I wanted to be there with them. I wanted that. And granted, it was only 7-8 weeks. But those are 7-8 weeks that you never get back. It's those most important bonding months that you never get back. And that I truly believe shape the future of that child's life. And you know, you want to talk about family values? You want to talk about, oh, we care about the children. This is one of those things. And it makes no sense that you wouldn't want, if you believe in family values, if you're one of those folks who say, well, you know, we care about the kids and we believe in good Christian values, It is about the kids. It's this kind of policy. It's this kind of stuff that I just think should be a matter of course. Not something that we've got to argue about. And the vast majority of the American people want it. The vast majority. Because they understand how it will make society that much better. But I guess it's easier to point fingers and yell and scream and carry on. It's easier to go after workers and destroy prevailing wage and destroy collective bargaining and destroy education. It's easier to do that. So much easier. Anyway, if you missed any portion of our program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you can go get the podcast or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program with you. You can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Love to hear from you. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like